Vault. Yeah, Film Vault. Welcome, everyone, to Film Vault. I'm Brian Bishop. That's Anderson. We're your hosts. And today on the Film Vault, we're talking top five movies you already know the ending to. Top five movies where you already know the ending. Going into it. A lot of
anger on my part for doing this. Yes.
Interesting. You think are you angry?
Yeah. Well, not angry, but do I do this every week now? Like the last 3 or 4 weeks, it's like, what is this topic? Why are we doing this topic? What is the deal with this topic? First of all, haven't we already done like top five nonfiction movies based on reality?
We do top five movies based on real events.
What's the difference?
I'm really glad you brought that up.
What's the difference?
I'm so glad you.
Can
brought
you tell
that
me
up.
What the difference is?
I'm just about to. I thought about that and I looked back at my list and I actually wrote it down what my list was last time.
Oh, good. I wish
and
I
my
had.
Top five movies were based on real events. Were not necessarily movies where you would know the ending. Yeah, they're based on true events, but I don't know what happens at the end of my number five, Black Hawk Down. I remember there was something in Mogadishu in Somalia, but I didn't quite know how it all panned out.
I'll tell you, the Black Hawk goes down.
And number four, I didn't know how the fighter was going to end. I mean, I know that I had no idea the Christian Bale character even existed. Mickey Ward, I didn't know now, if he was going to win his fight. I didn't know he was going to lose his fight.
Is it your obsession?
Number three, 50-50. Mm-hmm. I had no idea if Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character lived or died.
So you're going to go through the whole list.
Number
here.
Two, Social Network. You had an idea what was going to happen, but again, you don't know where it's going to shake down in
counting
terms of
four.
The court case, the battle over the ownership of Facebook, and of course, Goodfellas.
Five.
I wouldn't say that Henry Hill was a very well-known figure. I don't think anyone had an idea what was going to happen at the end of that movie.
Wasn't 50-50 written by the guy it's about?
It's written by Brian.
I didn't know that. I'd never heard of him before.
It was written by Brian. Yeah, it was. He based it on his actual life.
There you go.
And you realize at the end of the movie there'd be a 50-50 chance if he survived or not. Now.
So those five films, you don't necessarily know the end to, even though they're based on true events.
I should have looked at the text that went back and forth, but it went along the line something like Brian saying, hey, I've wanted to do this for a long, long time. Can we finally do this?
I have, and we finally have. Thank you.
Which leads me to believe that you have something up the sleeve.
Actually, I really don't.
I would hope that you have something clever or fun or good.
Okay.
Otherwise, Brian, what are we doing?
True story.
Is it your obsession with talking about the ends of movies? And you're like, what better way than to talk about five movies where...
This is a loophole in a sense where we can talk
good.
About the ending, but these are endings that are commonly known. These are endings where you go into the film and you're like, yeah, I know the story, but it's a great movie anyway. This is the true test of great filmmaking is you can take a story that we're all familiar with or we know the ending to or we know what to expect and you knock it out of the park.
Well, let me tell you. All right, go ahead.
To answer your question from just a second ago...
Mm.
I had what I would consider a clever entry. An entry a little bit clever. Controversial.
The smirk. Oh, controversial.
But
here we go.
Controversy. But, Anderson, at the last hour, at the final
the
hour.
The 12th hour. Yeah.
Literally
11th hour.
10
hour.
Minutes before 11th and a half hour.
Uh-huh.
10 minutes before I left for this very studio. Mm-hmm. I was on my couch. I go, no, I forgot one. And it was.
Oh, I love when that happens.
I put it right to number one.
That's
like,
happened.
Oh, how could I forget that?
To me, sitting in the chair. Now, I'm assuming that there's a number of them out there that are not on my list. And I started rolling with it. And I realized that I had a good 9 solid ones pulled. And I'm like, you know what? I wonder what old Fuckflix thinks for me on these ones. Turns out, for a first.
How do you research that?
I look at Fuckflix and I look
at
the movie.
About those 9
and
movies.
I see. All of my movies I have rated, because I don't rate a ton of movies. I probably rated like 500, maybe 600 movies. I don't rate every single movie I see. I like them to guess, right? I like to be able to go see and back and see what they thought. Rarity. All 9 of the movies that I pulled, I had already rated every single one 5 stars. Every single one 5 stars!
Well, similarly.
A lot of big, fluffy, huge, well-known names are going to be bandied about today. And every single one of my top fives, including a couple also-rans that I'm embarrassed to admit are 5 stars, will be mentioned on this here program.
Similarly, for me, Anderson, I also went to Netflix and was checking out what I had rated. And once I had remembered 10 minutes ago, the one that I put right to the top, number one, I was like, how did I not come across that one? Am I looking at my 5-star movies that I love so much? I love this movie. I fell through the cracks. I hadn't rated it somehow.
Because
of the 1,200 movies I've rated on Netflix, that was not one of them. Don't touch that. Don't touch that thing. Don't touch it. Freezing!
I just turned up the AC because it's
a little
warm.
You're wearing a hoodie.
Yeah, I suggest you begin doing the same because every week I touch the thing.
Right there.
Let's talk about Flick Fashion and the 5. Oh, speaking of Fuckflix and their algorithms, and I've been meaning to have Logan put this article, a link to an article on our homepage. A listener lady listener, one of our 8 percenters, sent me a very fascinating article over the Christmas holidays about how they came up with their algorithm. And it's been so long, and Logan's been failing so hard that I don't even recall the specific beats of the article, but I do remember it being fascinating on how they came up with the rating system and how they pick movies for you. It has to do with, like, hundreds upon hundreds of subgenres.
Sure, sure, sure.
And a bunch of people who probably a little OCD, maybe a little Asperger's-y, ended up breaking movies down into various subgenres. You know, like,
okay, not I'd love just, to read that article. Logan, just
noir,
get on that.
Not just noir, but like noir with African American.
Future noir featuring African American hero.
Right, yeah, that kind of thing. They got crazy with it, and turns out that, you know, Fuckflix knows me better than the wife. So
she often does.
They did something right there.
Yeah, I'm excited for this topic because, like I said, I've wanted to do it for a while. Had a controversial one, and now I might sneak it back in. I don't know. Controversial.
Well, I thought it was number one. I thought it went
no,
right to number one.
No, number one was my one right. That I was like, I must have this.
I'm excited for your list.
I was going to sneak one in at number five.
Excited.
I still might.
I'm excited for your list.
You know what else I'm excited for?
Flick Fashions.
Flick Fashions. Yeah. We're going to confess the flicks we've seen in the past week. Anderson, I would like you to go first.
Oh. I'd prefer you go.
I would like you to go.
Well, hold on. Let me see if there's any more business. Oh yes, this is actually good. God, it feels like it's been forever since I've seen you and the low kid over there.
Hey,
it's been a while.
Can I say something?
It's been a long week.
Apropos to that, can I say something?
Oh Christ,
I love you, buddy.
Stop it. Why are you doing this? Why are you doing that?
Because listener commented on our listener comments on our website. All it said was, "Do these guys even like each other?" And I don't want to come off that we don't like each other. We love. I can't say we, but I love Anderson. Yeah, I'll say it out loud. Is this mic working? Is this mic
Christ
on? Is this
almighty,
working?
This is getting super uncomfortable and awkward.
I love you, buddy.
Don't look at me when you say it.
There you go, listener. We're very fond of you.
I remember back in the day, in the early days, incarnation of the Sierra program, when we first went, like, you know, wide scale public over in the Ace Network, where, you know, we all of a sudden overnight. How would you say
the get it off era?
Got 40 times get it off. We got 40 times the amount of listeners kind of overnight. We had a good base of 1,000 people, and then all of a sudden overnight we had 40,000 new pairs of ears on us. Mm-hmm. A lot of negative energy, especially towards me. But a lot of many of the reviews back in that era was it's too late for these two. They already hate each other too much. They're never going to come back around. And it's like, no, guys, come on. It's not
wake
even
up.
Like, it's not shtick. We do. We just kind of rub each other the wrong way. But we tolerate each other.
It's the oil and vinegar. It makes a great salad dressing.
What was I saying? Where was I going?
And Logan's our salad.
He's our dressing.
He's our lettuce.
All right, here we go. Let's go. Flick Fashion.
Logan's more of a crouton.
I saw three movies. What was I talking about? I was going somewhere.
Last week.
So it's been a long time since I've seen you guys. I went out to lunch, as I'm known to do, with the mom and the dad. I like to keep tabs on them. Those two folks. Not too good.
Oh.
But take them to a Chinese restaurant. Try and go out with them about once a week, once every 2 weeks. I was sitting in this Chinese restaurant where they live, right next to this little tiny theater that plays, always has like two art house movies, one of which was Osage County, right?
Osage County.
Which I still maintain, I enjoy that movie a lot. Osage County, if you haven't seen it, give it a shot, because there's not a whole lot. August Osage County, written by Tracy Letts. I love that guy. He comes from the acting world, and he writes plays, playwright, Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright, as well as a Tony. But the movie is a hard R. It's exceptionally dark, as is Bug and Killer Joe. Not as dark as those two, but really well acted. And critics are hating on it because so many critics saw the play. And it's like one of those things where if you love the book, you're not going to like the movie. If you love the play, you're not going to love the movie. But the dinner scene is one of the best things that I saw of all of the movies that I saw from last year. But point being, I'm in this affluent white community eating Chinese food with my parents. And these three old yentas, they're all like 60 plus. Maybe like one of them's creeping in like up towards 80. They walk in, sit in the booth directly next to us, and just start going off about Osage County. And I was fascinated. My poor mom, she couldn't. She kept trying to like talk to me, and I'm like, Mom,
hold on. Eavesdropping.
Dude, eavesdropping on these three yentas talking about as though they were critics. And I realized, hey, if there was a movie podcast out there with old yentas talking about movies,
there should be.
Poorly, I would listen. And then I thought, this is going to be great. I'm going to find three yentas. I'm going to make a podcast out of this. And then I realized there's zero money to be made there. None. What do you do? I produce podcasts.
Our demo is 55 plus.
Plus, no one's going to listen to that except for me. But hearing them talk about how much they hated it, they all concurred that they all hated this movie because it was so dark and it was so just a bunch of losers. They're all just such losers, which would be a lot funnier if you had seen the movie because there are a lot of things, but not losers necessarily. Yeah. But as they talked about it, they obviously all were completely and totally captivated by this movie. And they liked it. They absolutely liked it, but they never once said that out loud.
They couldn't admit it.
I liked this. She was very good, but just what a bunch of losers. Oh, I would listen to that all night.
Nice.
All right, here we go. Sorry.
Speaking of last week.
Oh, my God.
Top five fictional cities. Really, really regret not putting Toontown on there from Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
I'm really happy that you had not.
That was a very well-realized city that was fully fleshed out.
Since I saw you last week.
I would have put it on.
I saw three films that I will talk about here. Actually, I saw more than that, but there's three that I'm talking about.
Toontown.
One is a movie starring a man named Tim Heidecker. You familiar with Tim Heidecker?
Tim Heidecker.
Heidecker.
I think.
Heidecker. He's from Tim and Eric. You a Tim and Eric guy over there?
No, but I know what movie you're talking about.
Comedy.
Yeah.
Talking about the comedy.
The comedian?
The comedy.
Oh, the comedy, yeah.
They call it the comedy because that's what it's called.
Right.
The comedian is the Jerry Seinfeld documentary.
You're right.
Just call it comedian.
I only made it through 20 minutes of this movie.
Okay. Well, at least you got a reference point, unlike my my friend over here to my left who loves me.
That's right.
The comedy is streaming now on Fuckflix. If you have the old Fuckflix, you can watch this. This was recommended to me by a listener through my website sometime over the summer. It's been sitting on my queue, and all you got to do is look at the poster, and you'll see why it was hard for me to watch finally.
No.
It's Tim Heidecker. Now, okay, Tim Heidecker and his buddy Eric and Zach Galifianakis made a fantastic trio, but it was mainly the first short that they made for Absolute Vodka back in the day. Mm-hmm. And I absolutely recommend everyone check out the Absolute Vodka commercial, if you can call it that, 7 minutes. I guess the story is Absolute Vodka gave those guys like a budget, and they said, you just have to make sure that you feature our product, Absolute Vodka. Can't talk disparagingly about it. And one other caveat. And it's one of the most random, hilarious things I've ever seen. And I've watched it numerous times. Then they made a second one and a third one, not quite as good. But it's just three guys sitting around a house.
Logan, when you post that article Anderson was talking about, post the link to that video.
I feel like
we've actually posted the video on a past episode of the Film Vault
I've talked about that before, yes. Okay.
But it might have been on our old website, so I'll go ahead and post it on this one, too.
I don't know if it holds up in today with all the... It stands up there for me with old Greg. I'm old Greg. Good shit. Anyways, a comedy directed and written by a guy named Rick Elverson. He's made some other things. This is the first movie I've seen by him. I wish that I had kept the streak going.
Your streak is broken.
See, now that people are shooting on video, you can do these things where you just go on and on and on with ad-libbing, hoping that funny shit happens. It's a series of...
It reminds me of that scene from Boogie Nights where he's like, what's going on here? And Jack Warner says to his DP, what are we doing here? And he's like, no, it's just video. We just keep shooting and shooting.
Right.
Because, like, remember the magic of shooting on film had gone away?
That's what we're having with a lot of features these days. And they let the camera roll until, like, something happens that could be considered funny. And conversations take place until something, like, could be considered comedic. It's just a series of very uncomfortable and uneventful scenes, including graphic hand sutures at one point.
Yikes.
Just when he thought that the language was he's talking to like his dad's.
The premise of this film?
The premise is this: he's like a well-to-do New York kid who's got an inheritance coming. His dad is essentially in a coma, vegetable state, living in the expensive apartment that he owns. He has a yacht. Does Tim and. He's kind of sitting around waiting for his dad to die and hanging out with his hipster friends. And he's at one point, he's sitting there drinking scotch, talking to the male nurse who's tending to his dad, changing his dad's diaper, essentially. And Tim is just being awful to him, going on and on, saying, do you ever get shit underneath your fingernails? And then, like, later you're, like, in the car and you're biting your nails and you think, oh, God, there might be shit in my mouth. Just that kind of thing. But it's, like, it's mean-spirited. It's not funny. Mm. And it's supposed to just be, like a portrait of a man, kind of adrift. But it's just insufferable.
It's supposed to be funny. Obviously, the name is a comedy.
No, it's not. I think that's where the irony lies. It's nothing is sacred. I mean, there's a bunch of bullshit that they do in a church, I guess, just to be offensive. Now, I've seen some Tim and Eric, and I could see that I would love that show if I was a stoner. I just don't smoke enough weed. And I watch shows like that, and I wish that I did, right?
Whose fault is that?
I never got on with the Tim and Eric thing.
Because you don't smoke weed. Look at you.
I don't like the fact that it's random for the sake of being random. I don't get it.
If you smoked weed, you would. Anyways, I'm sure there's some people. Critics actually like this. I think it's like 61% or 57%. There's.
You consider that liking it?
Yeah, the majority of critics that get paid to be critics like this fucking movie.
There you go.
Enjoy. Check it out. The comedy. Brian, another bullet in my gun.
We need to we need to coin a phrase for movies that critics like just because they're different. Like critics see too many movies, therefore they err sometimes towards just different randomness.
Who's gonna like this movie? People that are big fans of Tim and Eric.
Professional film critics who see too many movies.
Professional film critics may. I mean, at least it's gonna tip a scale and like more are going to like it. It might be 57%.
Well, majority.
I forget. I think you have to be over 60 to be certified fresh.
Okay.
It should be anything over 50%, right? Whatever.
I think it's over 75%.
So, well done, Brian, because for the first time in many weeks, the movie that you assigned me was not the bottom of the barrel.
Oh, nice.
I saw a movie called Saving Mr. Banks.
SMB.
Now, you saw this too, right?
I did.
Let's hop on together.
Look fast.
This is what inspired this week's episode.
Oh.
That's what you told me. You're like, in light of seeing Saving Mr. Banks, I feel like we should do top five movies where you know the ending. And I guess we know the ending of Mr. Banks is that, yes, Mary Poppins becomes a movie.
It does get made. So, yes, this was kind of
spoiler,
an inspiration.
Alert, the movie gets made.
Oh, well, Mary Poppins happens, everyone.
Okay, let's talk a little Saving Mr. Banks. First of all, I have been misquoting this movie for the past number of weeks now.
Yep.
I've been saying,
$5.
You just won me $5. Nope. Well, when it really is, I just won $20.
Directed by John Lee Hancock, who directed The Blind Side, Tom Hanks, Emma Thompson, Colin Farrell. Colin Farrell. Paul Giamatti.
Colin Farrell was fantastic. The best part of this movie were the flashbacks.
No, I thought it was interminable.
I'm totally joking.
Okay, I was going to say all that.
This movie might have had a shot.
Yes.
Had they just eradicated.
They just stayed with the story. Yeah. So the story is, everyone knows, the story of Mary Poppins getting made. But they go to a series of flashbacks that never fucking end, and they go to it throughout
the
story.
They were in love with these flashbacks. I don't know if it was because they spent a lot of money on the locations.
Oh, it's brutal.
I like Colin Farrell usually, but it was every single cliche that's been done in movies was hit upon.
It was clumsy and heavy-handed because you guys are going to find this hard to believe. The flashbacks not only paralleled the story you were seeing, but they directly impacted like who this woman was and how she was behaving. Everything from her childhood was coming true again in her life.
There would have been so many more interesting ways to do that. You didn't even have to show us that. Just let us figure it out on our own through.
It's like every flashback scene foreshadowed the next scene in like the current times. Mm-hmm. It was rough. That said, not a bad movie.
Yeah, it's a bad movie. Is this the first time Walt's been portrayed on the
screen? I heard it was.
Yeah, I couldn't recall. I meant to look that up, but I did not. Okay.
Heard it was?
I love Tom Hanks. Who doesn't love Tom Hanks?
Sure.
Tom Hanks does not have the range that Hollywood likes to think he does. This was not a good performance by Tom Hanks.
This is not what you call
this
sweet spot.
This was a Southern man doing a Tom Hanks impression. That's what it felt like. It felt like a man from the 60s from the South doing Tom Hanks somehow today.
Yeah, this is not in a sweet spot.
He was Tom Hanks throughout.
He's swinging at a pitch outside the strike zone.
Never once did I think, oh, look, Walt Disney. Ever.
No.
Which, you know, when the movie is about Walt Disney. Yeah, he really friendly. I liked him. Every time he came on stage, on screen, I got a little warm in my stomach because I love Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
Because he was Tom Hanks.
I call this movie sweet but toothless.
I have no doubt that it was a very good script. It was a good script.
I felt like it was probably rewritten 10 or 12 times. Like a many, many rewrites.
Prerequisites for this movie to like it. And there are going to be a lot of people that like it. I think the majority of people that go see this movie would like it.
80-something percent around.
You got to be a fan of Mary Poppins, I think. I think you have to like Mary Poppins. I think you have to not mind tons of cliches that you're going to be hit over the head with the 1906 stuff. It read like a movie of the week.
Yep.
That flashback shit was
the
like...
The flashback was rough.
And if you're a little, if you like, you know... lean on the dumb part of the scale. You know, if you lean dumb, you're going to enjoy it.
Let's put it this way. If you like simple pleasures.
Goddamn cliche melodramatic. It was like two different movies. And I was laughing out loud quite a bit when she was like, you know, with Bradley Whitford and
BJ Novak.
BJ Novak.
And Schwartzman.
Schwartzman and trying to figure out how scripts work. I mean, there was some really funny shit there. But, and the end of the movie was fucking glorious, where they do that thing that I love so much, where they show the actual pictures and we could see actual Walt, because I was forgetting what Walt looked like, because he was so un-Walt-like.
He was like Tom Hanksy.
So Tom Hanksy. But they showed the actual pictures. Not only that, main point of the movie was that she demanded that everything be recorded on a reel-to-reel as they were going over the script, because she was very concerned that they were going to manipulate something.
Right.
which I kind of appreciated that. She didn't want to let go of her story, and she didn't want Walt to Disney-fy it. That's I don't blame him.
Yeah.
Ironically, the movie was Disney-fied in itself. Mr. Banks was Disney-fied, and she needed to be around for this one. Might have been better.
Sweet irony.
But at the end, they actually played some of the reel-to-reel of the actual woman doing the did you stick around for that?
Oh, right. Is that the very end of the credits? I didn't see the reel-to-reel. I saw the pictures.
It's like 2 minutes into the credits.
No,
like the picture. Oh, it's so good. You could actually hear the real woman's voice, and they had a static shot of a reel-to-reel. It was really...
Oh, interesting.
It made me... Almost want to like the movie more than I did.
I'll track that down on YouTube someday.
And Paul Giamatti, his character, which apparently was one of the most invented parts of the entire movie.
I feel like the movie wasn't exactly 100% accurate.
They added this character, who was her driver in it, and he was the most humanistic character in the film, I would say. He has a handicapped daughter, and he's just very, very kind. He takes people berating him with class and with ease and grace. And... I'm kind of choked up.
Really?
In his dealings with her. He was Giamatti plays humble so well.
Wow.
I hate it when he's playing an asshole. He's so good as a humble dude.
You had a different reaction to this film than I did.
But I did not like it.
Okay. Ironically, I think I liked it more than you.
It was like an art house film ending. Really liked it. Actual pictures. Mm. All right. But you know what? One sign of it not being a good movie is... Did not make me want to go back and revisit Mary Poppins in the least. You know what I mean?
The same thing. I was like,
if it was interesting
like Mary Poppins right now.
At all, no matter how bad the movie that it is about, like you know, Mary Poppins not made for Anderson at all. But if it was a more interesting movie, it would make me want to go back and revisit that because of all the shit that I learned and saw. But no, not so much. Finally, Barbara, I saw a movie that's streaming on Fuckflix right now. We can all watch it just from last year. Directed by a man named David Gordon Green.
DGG?
Yeah, DGG. It's called Prince Avalanche, Brian.
Prince Avalanche.
Yes. This is a movie that you probably saw a few trailers for. You should be a little bit familiar with it, I'm hoping. A little. Emile Hirsch.
Okay.
Paul Rudd.
Okay.
No? Nothing?
Not really.
No. Mm-hmm.
I probably saw a trailer for it.
Good, good.
Well, tell me what it's about, baby.
Here's what happened. David Gordon Green, the man with range. The kid, he's a younger director, writer. A lot of range.
What did I know him from?
He did you probably best know him from Pineapple Express.
Okay.
He also did Your Highness, is that what it was called? He's got range.
Did not say.
He's done a lot.
Yeah, I know who he is now.
He made this movie because in his town, there was a big fire, and it burned all sorts of acreages, right? Somewhere in Texas.
Okay.
Tejas. And he was driving through there, and I don't know if you've been through scorched land, and that after when things start growing back, it's really beautiful. Huh. The contrast of the new green with the black burnt backdrop, it's beautiful stuff. And he fell in love with that area, and he's like, he decided he wanted to make a movie. It was totally backwards. Instead of coming up with your idea for a movie and going out and location scouting and finding the right place for your script, he's like, I need to find a script that matches that.
It goes here.
Yeah, so he found this Swedish film.
He reverse engineered it.
He found a Swedish movie about two guys that are repaving and redoing a road in a burnt out part of Sweden. And he bought the rights to it, and he made this movie. And it's very, very simple. It's just, for the most part, it's all Paul Rudd and Emile Hirsch. And I've never been much of an Emile Hirsch fan, but he plays comedic very well, I learned while watching this. Didn't like the movie a ton while I was watching it, and I've learned to absolutely love it. I was, like, recalling certain – all right, here's – I hate fart humor. I really do, right? Okay. There's this one scene where Paul Rudd is sitting at this little makeshift table that they have because they're out in the wilderness. It's just the two of them out by repaving the – not repaving the road, but repainting the lines.
Yes, I know exactly what this is.
Putting the poles in, the reflector poles.
Yes, I'm dead serious for this.
That's the whole thing. That's their job.
Right.
And to be out in the wilderness, Paul Rudd loves it. He thrives on – so he thinks. Yeah, it's a story about a guy who lies to himself consistently in Paul Rudd's character, telling himself that he – wants to be out in the wilderness with nobody else. He's in love with Emile Hirsch's sister, right? That's why he got Emile Hirsch the job. Emile Hirsch is a very simple young man. God, he's fucking funny in this movie. And all he wants to do is get laid, and he's kind of like forced to work with his sister's boyfriend out here on this horrible job, you know, repainting the lines. And they're having like some dinner, and Paul Rudd's sitting there at this little table set up by their trailer. And Paul Rudd just, you know, leans over and farts, which I, you know, not a big fan of at all. And Emile Hirsch just goes, oh, man, farts. And it's just that kind of humor all the way through. And Emile Hirsch is explaining that he had to change a tire at this one juncture in the movie, and he's like, and it's like really hard. Changing a tire is so hard. I don't think you realize it until you actually do it. All he wants to do is like have sex. Like he takes off for the weekend to go hook up with his wife. His stories are so brilliantly stupid and awesome. And I've been throwing this thing on in the background, and it's just got some great dialogue. I love this movie. It's
should we do top five brilliantly stupid characters? You know what I mean? Top five great stupid characters?
Yeah, it might not be terrible. Just no mentally challenged people, please.
No, stupid. It's offensive. Like, there's it's offensive. Dim.
You shouldn't fuck with anyone.
They have all their faculties.
Like top five slacker characters super or something like
just
that?
Just top five dumb characters.
He's like a
stupid character.
Surprisingly, Emil Hirsch put on some weight, and he...
slacker falls under that category, generally.
He was like a young Jack Black. Mm. Like, remember
wow,
when Jack,
yeah.
when the good Jack
High
Black.
High fidelity Jack Black.
But not like as hyper frenetic. He wasn't like all
no,
over. He wasn't jumping around.
Jack Black.
I really did like this movie, and I didn't realize it while I was watching. I was laughing, and I was enjoying myself, but it was like, you know, haunting me afterwards. And I was thinking about it, and sticking around, and then I put it on. It's one of those movies, second pass, much funnier. So, Prince Avalanche. You can check that out now. It's 2013, just from last
year.
There
you go.
Why did I start?
Because I wanted to see if you were going to have any films that I'd also seen.
Well, you tried to text me so we could kind of line up, and I told you to watch Prince Avalanche, and you said no. Do you recall that? Text, I can pull it up if you like.
No, I absolutely do, but I didn't have time to watch Prince Avalanche. You texted me that yesterday.
It was 2 days ago. And I said, will you watch Prince Avalanche so we can both talk about that? And you just
I said,
wrote,
no. Yeah, I couldn't watch it.
That's not what you do to people you love, Brian.
All right, if it's great, then assign it to me someday if you ever win again. Save Mr. Banks, I talked about. Here's another film that Anderson Flickfest a couple of weeks back, and... also was apropos to our, well, appropriate, not apropos, that means relative.
All right.
Appropriate for this week because it is a film I was very familiar with the ending to, but I wanted to see anyhow. Talk about Fruitvale Station.
Oh.
From last year.
Kevin Durant with
Fruit
his teeth.
Fruitvale Station. Huh?
Cop at the end.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, so, this could have been.
What?
Oh, that's why you said apropos. Okay.
Yes, that's why I said.
I just freaked out. I'm like, this could have been on today's list.
Oh, this could have been today's list. Yes, it absolutely could have.
I don't listen to you.
Directed by Ryan Coogler. He is a 27-year-old USC grad.
I hate
it. His debut film.
Stop it.
Michael B. Jordan, who you know from Chronicle.
So good. Without him in this movie's not even talked about.
No, he is fantastic. In fact, I thought for sure this is on my queue because I'm like, oh, this guy will get nominated for an Oscar.
By the way, we have not talked about the Oscar nominations that have come out since our last episode. We have not talked about them.
I'm not prepared.
They came out the day after we recorded.
Yeah, we are a movie show. We should talk about them a little bit at some point, no?
Yeah, of course.
Some snubs?
Well, of course. We always have the top five Oscar locks.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. It's coming up soon, right?
That's right. And the Vaulties.
Okay. I should just, before you move on, okay. I should just say Cutie and the Boxer is streaming now.
Yes,
watched it. Pretty good. Pretty good. It's up for best documentary. It's one of the big ones that is up for best documentary and is available on your old Fuckfix account there if you have any interest.
Well, if I can add to what you just said, it is a great year for streaming movies because four of the five nominees for best documentary are streaming.
Oh, four of the five?
Yes. The fifth one, 20 Feet from Stardom, is probably available on disc.
And
the other four
the Square is not.
The Square is streaming.
Since when?
They've added it.
Oh!
They added it like a couple days ago.
Okay, cool, because I was looking for that. That's the only documentary I've not seen that's up for best.
It's on my queue.
Best doc.
It's on my
All
Q.
Right, good, good. Good times.
Maybe we'll discuss it next week.
Perhaps we both will. Mm-hmm. I'm excited now with The Square being complete.
I thought that was a Netflix original because I've been seeing billboards for it and it says presented by Netflix.
I just got an email from Netflix saying The Square now available to stream.
Maybe they bought the distribution rights. Maybe that's a new thing that they're getting into.
Maybe that's why it's presented by Netflix.
Makes sense.
But back to Fruitvale Station for a second. Octavia Spencer from The Help is also in this. People, I think, know how it ends. I certainly went into it knowing how it ends because it was a big story. The kid who gets shot by a cop on a BART, which is the public transit in the Bay Area Rapid Transit. He gets shot on a BART train or outside a BART train on New Year's Day in 2009. And the fallout, actually not the fallout, it's the lead up. That kind of ends the film, and this is the entire lead up. It's his last day alive. It's a real character study. It's also a real fucking downer. I wouldn't recommend this to people who don't like dark movies.
If you hate dogs, you might enjoy a certain scene.
Oh, come on. But yeah, this is a,
all right, there's a
tough
lot,
movie to get through.
I've heard a lot of people talking about this movie over the last number of months since it's come out. And I actually took some abuse from talking about it positively on this here program.
Why? It's a good movie.
Because I talked about the character as being human, and he's not by any means a perfect character.
Yeah,
he's
they
not,
show
he's
flaws.
No angel. But what I've not heard anyone talk about, because of all of the crazy cliches and huge life-affirming moments that happen, and it takes place in a day. Did you mention that? All these crazy things
take place in the course of one day, yes.
Happen, but what's said in the very beginning of the movie is these are all based on things that actually happened in this guy's life. Mm. So they're just showing this man,
Well, actually, there's a lot of flashbacks, too, to when he's in jail.
And there's flashbacks and whatnot, too. But also, he had a pretty busy day on the day that he died in the movie version, because they crammed a bunch of things, stories of his friends actually told. And just for the sake of convenience for storytelling, they put it all in one day.
Yeah.
And you got to just accept that for what it is. And a lot of people have a hard time saying, all these things happened, just happened to happen on the day that he died.
Oh, please. Their artistic license can be used in any number of ways to illustrate a point in a movie.
But, it opens up with him smoking weed and ignoring his kid and trying to, hook up with his girlfriend. Look, and she knows he's cheating. I mean, it opens up with this guy being an asshole. And the fact that the director could still bring you around and make you like him a little bit, and he could act well enough to actually get you to care about him at all. I know a lot of people didn't care about him at all, and I call those people racists.
I feel bad for –
racist. They're racist, bro.
Okay.
They're the kind of people that laugh and applaud during 12 Years a Slave. I said that.
Who did that?
A lot of people did.
No, they did not.
Yeah, they do.
Stop it. I feel bad for people who get so worked up over movies like this where they rearrange some details, or they combine characters into one, or they combine details into one day, because these people must go through life thinking like every documentary is 100% real, and like
it's not.
It's the things aren't moved out of order to make a point.
I have a documentary that's 100% real, actually. I just don't want to talk about it yet because I don't want people to send away for Leviathan. I'm waiting for it to stream. I'm thinking it will soon, but holy fuck.
Okay.
Leviathan.
My point is, most movies have some artistic license, and you have to understand that, or I have a horrible life when it comes to movies.
It's true.
I would not call this a fun movie. I would not call it a feel-good movie. Mm. How about this for future top five, the way
Feel good if you're a dirty cop.
You want to do this for a future top five?
What's that?
Top five movies. Someone recommended this on the old Twitter over there. Top five movies. He's had of the last 25 years, but it could be any time period, 10 years, whatever. Movies with zero Oscar nominations.
What the fuck? No, terrible, awful.
Why?
That's most movies every year.
Yeah, it's most movies every year. All you gotta do is think about great movies and go, I really hope it didn't get up for any awards. And then we're also gonna have huge lists of great independent movies that the Oscars we could do this year. Just think of all the great movies. My top 10 list is probably gonna be 9 movies that aren't nominated for anything.
Of the live of this year. All right, whatever.
Spirit Awards.
That was a good list.
That's gonna be a bunch of Spirit Awards movies.
Anyhow,
in a world.
That's right. Very much. That would be very much my list problem.
I can't believe you thought that was going to go for Oscars, you fool.
That was absolutely. No. Oh, man. I could have totally seen that up for Best Original Screenplay.
No way.
It was so well written.
It is, but it's just not an Oscar movie. It's not an Academy movie. Mm. They're stuffy.
But there's plenty of quirkities that have gotten the Little Miss Sunshine of the world and the Junos of the world. There's always one of those little movies that comes up out of nowhere and gets an Oscar nomination, especially
for this year. It's fucking Philomena. This year, that's their cutesy little. We know it's not going to win, but it's sweet.
Save.
Oh, well, let's get into it.
Fruitvale Station. I did not like the pervasive use of the word Frisco. Did not like that.
That would take you out because it's totally not what people would say.
Although,
right?
To be fair, I've not spent a lot of time in the urban areas of Oakland, Hayward.
I can't imagine.
So perhaps they do call it Frisco.
I picture you up there slamming 40s of Schlitz.
However, redeemed by the pervasive use of the word Hella. Hella was all over this film.
Oh, you're such a tool.
What happened?
No, I know that people from San Francisco hate when you say Frisco.
The only thing worse, San Fran.
San Fran. What are you supposed to say? The entire
the city.
Word?
The city or San Francisco.
The city is the most obnoxious thing any city has ever come up with for themselves.
How's SF?
How do you think people that live in Oakland right next door feel about people saying, I live in the city. Where do you live?
Yeah, maybe they do. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't know when I go over there. You know what you liked? Probably at the end when they show the real pig bill, including his daughter.
Loved it.
Yeah.
Finally. I got an email from someone saying, I think that you're completely off base liking to see the actual people in the pictures at the end of movies. It takes you out, and no longer is Ray Liotta Henry Hill in my head. It becomes Henry Hill becomes Henry Hill, and that ruins the entire illusion that Scorsese put together.
That's a bad example, though, because Henry Hill.
I know. They didn't even show him at the end.
God damn it.
I was grasping. I go, Tom Hanks is no longer Walt Disney in my head.
Tom Hanks is no longer Forrest Gump.
He's no longer an astronaut. Safe!
Finally. Finally. Philomena. The aforementioned Philomena. It's in theaters now.
Got directed a lot by of problems
with this movie. Stephen Frears, High Fidelity, director of High Fidelity, the previously mentioned High Fidelity. Steve Coogan also co-wrote this, stars in it, along with Dame Judi Dench. It's up for 4 Oscars. Best Picture, Best Actress, Best Score.
She talks about her clitoris.
Best Adapted Screenplay. She does. I was picturing it at that moment.
please don't do that.
Do clitorises get
stop
wrinkled?
It. Stop it. They get what?
Wrinkled with old age.
Right.
Skin.
I thought you were going to say something much worse, like engorged, and I didn't want to hear that.
Come on. That's
I
gross.
Thought you were going to ask that. And that's something that they would talk about, like, in the comedy.
Oh, that's a good point.
He would spend a lot of time.
I bought tickets
talking.
For this film, Anderson, knowing nothing about it, other than it was up for a bunch of Oscars.
You're insulting me.
And when I clicked on it, I never saw a trailer. When I clicked on the little
I
ticket thing.
I flick-fest it in here, like, the week it came out.
I knew nothing about it.
How do I do it, Logan?
Nothing about
How
it.
How do I continue?
You should be appreciative of my ability to wipe my memory clean of films I have not seen.
I wish I could do that with you.
Oh, please.
Not the movies you talk about, just you.
Just when
just
I speak?
Wipe my memory of you.
Listeners, we really do love each other. It seemed like homework to me when I thought of Philomena. It just seemed like a British movie, and it's about someone looking for their long-lost son, and it's going to be blah, blah, blah. I got to be honest with you, Anderson. I really enjoyed Philomena.
Wow.
I liked
good.
It quite
please
a bit.
Please explain to me why. I liked it quite a bit.
I found it to be a very sweet movie. Got a tiny bit dusty there on the end.
No way.
It did a little bit dusty. But you have said the same thing about Mr. Banks and stupid Paul Giamatti. I didn't find that dusty.
Giamatti was such a sweetheart.
I found Philomena to be such a sweetheart.
She gave him a little list of all the people with problems, mental problems.
That's right. It's
that
good
sweet.
Stuff. I liked it.
He could have put down Mary Poppins once he realized who she was. He was such a sweet guy. Philomena, here's my fundamental problem with Philomena is I never gave a flying. Okay, Philomena is a true life story.
I believe it is a real story. Yeah, they show the real woman at the end.
She,
the real woman.
Simple lady, simple woman mm-hmm. who wants to be a nun, but she likes the way her.
Now, this is shown in good flashbacks.
Decent flashbacks.
Flashbacks.
She likes, and we're not giving a ton away. This is the fundamental part of the story. This is the actual bones of the story. She enjoys the way her vagina feels when it's rubbed and especially penetrated. So she hooks up with the dude at a fair, at a carnival, mm-hmm. so that he can continue rubbing her vagina
Anderson,
with his penis.
This is not Dame Judi Dench. This is a younger version.
Yes.
You didn't explain that. So
well, it's
that
done in flashback sequences. So
you
she explains it pretty much like she pretty much explains it the way I'm talking
sure.
right now, right? Like,
yes.
I just liked the way it felt, so I allowed it to happen. And she got a bun in the oven. And she went to live with the nuns. The nuns were mean, and they made her give up the child.
The nuns took her bun.
Took her bun and sold her bun mm-hmm. to an American.
Ooh.
Yeah? And I never cared one iota about how she was, any kind of connection with that child at all. I never felt bad that she lost the child. She was crying, and that little young Judi Dench actress was bawling her eyes out. And I never want, for whatever reason, they didn't set up a good bond between that kid and Philomena. And it never occurred to me that I should care throughout the entire movie. And the entire movie is her looking with Steve Coogan, who I love, and he co-wrote this. But it's them looking for the fucking kid. And I don't give a shit. I didn't care.
I didn't even need the setup, to be honest with you. I could have just done the whole road trip movie, and I would have liked just the quest. I mean, I understand. I didn't need it to be explained to me because I understand the longing. I don't know personally, obviously, but I understand the longing that a mother can have for the son she was forced to give up for adoption so many years ago. She's never seen him since. I understand that. That makes sense to me, intuitively.
I did like Judi Dench more than I've ever – I like her as a stern witch. You know, I like her playing Queen Elizabeth. I like her, you know, being a strong, strong woman. But it was fun seeing her in this completely different light as kind of like an innocent – almost a simpleton, you know?
Mm.
She was very, very simple and sweet and – it was nice seeing her in that light for the first time, but a very forgettable movie. I'm very surprised that people like it as much as they do.
I like the odd couple element. I like the road trip buddy thing where they kind of grow into an understanding. They have some great philosophical debates on religion and just life, and I really enjoyed the dynamic. And it got in and out. It was 95 minutes. It was a perfect length. Mm-hmm. It wasn't this movie that dragged forever. I thought it told a good story.
Well, I didn't think it was a bad movie. It's the kind of movie like you could watch it on a plane and go, okay. That's nice.
I tell you what, the one thing I didn't like was, and I can see how this would drive you. Well, I hope it drove you nuts because it drove me nuts. The one chink in the armor, the one part of the film I really.
Logan is here and he'll be offended.
He's only half listening. What was the other half? So, the one part of the film I didn't like was at the end or towards the end, there is a cartoonish villain that didn't need to be a part of the movie, did not need the involvement, didn't need it to be so cartoonish. Remember the one I'm talking about?
No.
You don't remember it?
Do you remember the part where I said the movie's forgettable?
Wow, it really is, I guess.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's the one part of the film I didn't like. Other than that, I really enjoyed it.
You know what? I'll pull up my review.
Last few times.
AndersonCohen.com.
Got a little dusty towards the end.
What was dusty?
When she went.
Never mind. What am I? I'm setting you up for failure there, buddy. That's my fault. I apologize.
I almost explained exactly where it was dusty.
I'm shocked that we've gotten this far without you talking about some key elements.
Oh, come on.
I'm shocked. I thought for sure I was going to have poor Logie cut some stuff out.
Who's Logie?
All right, let's get moving on.
Coming up next, we're going to talk about top five films where you already know the end.
This is the best day of my life. And I'm sick of running around. I can't help getting bored. This night is getting worse and I hope I sleep my way through work.
It's cold out there, Anderson.
It's freezing.
It's freezing.
Many
know,
places.
Someone decided to remedy the coldness at night by getting a king-size heating pad with ultra-heat technology through the Film Vault Amazon banner right there on AndersonandBryan.com.
Ooh.
Time to read through the interesting...
Were you sleeping on top of it?
I imagine it's a heating pad, so I imagine it goes on top. I imagine it goes on top. But it's time to read through the interesting and notable
electric blanket.
Over on the old Amazon click-through banner. Someone got something called, what is this, Passion Lubes Premium Silicon Lubricant.
You start with that.
Silicone. No, I didn't start with it. It was second. So silicone lubricant. Someone got a Jawbone wristband. Someone got...
What is that? So that you can talk on the phone through your wrist?
It must be. I saw someone post, one of my friends on Facebook posted it, and I was like, oh, someone got a Jawbone wristband. They're very excited about it. What is this? A GoPro Hero 3 Silver Edition. Wow, how about that?
That's nice. That's very nice. I have one, but it's Black Edition, and it's one of my favorite things that I own.
Wow, nice. What do you use it for?
Making pictures.
Oh, okay. Someone got a, what does it say? Oh, massage cream. Good luck massaging. You, yourself, or friends. Someone got, what is it? Two all-purpose front/rear tires. Good luck. Someone got a Leonardo costume from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Coming back. I saw them out in front of a movie theater the other day.
Really?
Posing for pictures.
Nice.
In front of her. The movie was her that they were standing in front of. Weird. Mm. Weird combo.
It's an odd combination.
A bunch of hipsters watching her and Las Feliz having their pictures taken with Leonardo.
Mm.
Yeah.
How about that? Someone got an undermount 16-gauge sink. You know what that means?
No idea.
It's the good stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, 16 gauge is good. Yeah. So is undermount, by the way. Undermount's good because you can wipe the crumbs right into the sink without having to get it, like, stuck.
I don't know what you're talking about right now.
When you're wiping crumbs off the counter into the sink, don't you hate when it gets stuck under the, like, sink lip? Undermount sink goes...
I have no idea what he's talking about. I'm fine with it. I can move on with my life.
Someone got a garage door remote from LiftMaster. Someone got, Pittsburgh Penguins.
Smart move.
Bottle opener, lanyard, key ring.
Oh, I have that.
Oh, my name, was it you? Oh,
no,
my God, it was
I've
you.
I had it.
Someone got a University of Michigan t-shirt. LA Galaxy t-shirt. What is this? Body Glide. Oh, this sounds sexual, but it was under sports and outdoors. Body Glide anti-chafe for her.
It's for joggers who do a little rubbing, a little chafing.
All right, there you go. Someone got TurboTax, tax time. Someone got themselves the TurboTax Deluxe Edition. And someone got a Victor Cruz New York Giants home jersey. Pond pump for their pond. And America, back-to-back world champs, koozie. This makes like 5 weeks in a row someone's gotten this. Someone got a, a laundry trolley to trolley their laundry around.
Makes sense.
Finally, a 1,000-watt 5-speed juice extractor for extracting the juice.
1,000 watts.
1,000 watts.
That's like as much as like a 5.1 sound system.
It's crazy.
1,000 watts.
Movie time.
Here we go. In the movies that were clicked through since Burn After Killing.
Huh?
What the fuck is Burn After Killing?
Is that Burn After Reading?
No, it's Burn After Killing.
I don't know why.
I'm not even familiar.
I thought I messed with red.
Can't Buy Me Love is on there. Flashdance. Wow, going back to the 80s. A lot of the 80s. Huh? Love Story, another 80s. Look at that. Love Stories. No, Love Stories.
It might be 1980.
I was thinking of LA
Story. No, that was
LA Story.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Totally different movie.
Right.
Steve Martin talking to a street sign.
Love Story.
Sarah Michelle.
No, Sarah Jessica Parker.
Sarah Jessica Parker. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
very young, sexy.
Yeah. Bouncing around there.
An LA Story. Sorry, completely off-roading on this read here. Defending Your Life with my number one fictitious place.
Fictitious City. Judgment City.
Hot Tub Time Machine. I maintain good. In a world. It's a mad, 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 mad world. Did I have too many mads? I don't think so. It's a mad, 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 mad world. Love that mad world. Love it. Check that movie out if you haven't seen it. Revenge of the Nerds, I was just referencing at a party this weekend, and people looked at me confused. Fuck you. You should watch that movie. Patriot Game. I'm not going to say Patriot Games.
Don't say it.
The Kids Aren't All Right. Not familiar with that. What is that movie? The Kids Aren't All Right. Is that an answer to The Kids Are All Right?
That's a Who documentary.
Okay. All right. There Will Be Blood. Why don't I own that? Every week, Silver Linings Playbook. Spectacular Now. Brian, you got to check that movie out. Spectacular Now. Fantastic movie. The Bad News Bears, the good one, 76. This is the End. I'm not going to say Under Siege. You crazy? Waiting for Guffman? I'm not going to say that one either. Wall-E, I'll say that one. What about Bob? What about Bob? I'm sailing. Holy shit, I love that movie.
Is this some kind of radical new therapy?
Those are the movies. God damn it, I love What About Bob.
Good movie. Thank you all for your purchases. We appreciate it. And now back to the show. Hey, you guys. It's Sloth from The Goonies. And you're listening to The Film Vault on AndersonandBrian.com. Don't laugh at that, Anderson. Lowbrow comedy.
I assure you I was not, but
really?
I did hear...
Really? Farts?
I did hear you laughing, which made me uncomfortable. You'd be laughing at your own little sloth.
Thanks. Good talk, Russ. Yeah, good talk, Russ. That's a nice film reference there. They're a band. Took their title from a film reference from Tucson, Arizona. They're a feature artist of the week. Download their album for free now at ReverbNation.com/goodtalkRuss. R-U-S-S.
By the way, I should throw that out there that I do need to go after some more celebrities to record those lines. So if any listeners have suggestions on which celebrities I should go after, please tweet them to me.
Okay.
Or Facebook.
At Logan Moy?
No, the Film Vault. The Film Vault.
At the Film Vault.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we didn't want to know what celebrities to approach for liners.
I actually have a couple. I've just never used them on the three.
Really?
Oh, wow. I got a couple back in the day when I used
to. That'd be hilarious
to
fucking mix one in. One end of the ridiculous. Hi, I'm Cassius Clay. And then I have a real one. Mm-hmm. It'd be good.
Let's do this nonfiction movies. Top five nonfiction movies.
Are they?
Or maybe they're not.
Anderson, I do have one that I hesitate to even put on. That said, if we have any crossover, I vow to replace it with my controversial choice. Vow!
All right, Brian. Mine are from many different eras, but for one. But for two, I should say, that had come out the same year, but everything else, different decades.
Really?
And a Film Vault first. Who would you like to go first? I feel like I should go first so you can end strong because
like
this
you
is your
first.
Topic.
I'd like you to go first.
I'm going to do the old magic trick, pick a card, because I'm not ranking these fuckers.
Really?
I'm just doing my five.
You're throwing them up in the air?
They're all five stars.
Start with this one right here.
Well, why would you start with the one on top?
Okay. Well,
it's already on top.
Okay. Hand it
I'll
over.
Do it. I'll do it. I'll do it. Look, we're starting with fucking one of the best.
That's truly random.
This would have been number one, probably.
Hand it over.
Amadeus!
Amadeus.
Are we doing crossover already?
No crossover.
Really?
I put Amadeus on too many lists, and I love this movie.
It is on a lot of lists, and I think it's mainly your list. I don't talk about Amadeus as much. I love Amadeus. Milos Forman. Some interesting facts. Let's run through some interesting facts here.
The soundtrack is great. Rock me, Amadeus. Amadeus.
This was one of the toughest jokes, and it made me snort. It was Falco, who is now dead. Rest his soul. Pay tribute and respect to Falco.
Sorry, buddy.
God, that's a good song.
Falco.
Some interesting little factoids here. These are all five of my movies on my list, too. Shame on you if you've not seen these. These are all like obligatory.
Ones you should have seen.
Must see, must have in your repertoire. Must have in your brain. All classics, all fantastic.
Amadeus, did it win Best Picture in 84?
It did.
Yeah, there you go.
Best Picture winner.
Best Supporting Actor.
A number of professors, Brian, stated while studying the film and watching all the keys that were hit by
Tom Hulse.
By Tom Hulse.
Where have you gone, Tom Hulse?
Accurate. All of them accurate.
Really?
Absolutely accurate. Yeah. Oh, you just had this movie on a list not too long ago.
Probably,
I remember
yeah.
talking about Tom Hulse from Parenthood.
Yeah. Where have you gone, Tom Hulse?
So
you knew the ending of this movie. I did.
I was familiar enough with both him and Beethoven and Mozart. And yes, I was familiar with Salieri. And is it not common knowledge? Should I not talk about
it? No. It is. I don't know. I think when I saw it, I was too young. But if you saw it at a certain age or you had known a certain – just enough. Yeah, this is pretty common knowledge. Amadeus and Mozart and Salieri are kind of his great historical rivals.
So all the keys were exactly what you were seeing. And he was absolutely accurate. And the music was all pre-recorded. And Tom Hulse spent practiced like hours and hours and hours every day at the piano to appear convincing as well as get the keys down exactly. So essentially he was Mozart by the time that they were ready to shoot this thing, which is incredibly, incredibly –
He was Wolfgang.
The entire film was shot using natural light, much like Barry Lyndon, Brian, which I still maintain is Stanley Kubrick's hardest movie to get through.
Have not seen.
Hardest movie to get through.
That's probably why.
Just very slow.
Yeah, I understand.
Very slow.
I saw the exhibit and it looked slow.
Very, very unlikable character. Not one character.
The museum exhibit I saw looked slow.
Mel Gibson, Mick Jagger, Sam Waterston, and Tim Curry all auditioned for the role of Mozart.
Wow, can you imagine? Oh, wow. Who? Read the list again. Mel Gibson?
Mel Gibson, Mick Jagger, Sam Waterston, and Tim Curry. Tim Curry.
Sam Waterston?
Yeah.
Wow.
They all wanted to prance around in tights.
I guess so.
Saying, I'm Mozart.
That great laugh.
Yeah. Now, that was actually apparently fairly accurate. Obviously, no recordings of Mozart's actual laugh, but many writings and what would you call them?
Historical accounts.
Accounts and
documentation.
What's the word when you're going back and forth and you're writing to someone and they write
correspondence?
You? Correspondence. Correspondence is the official word I was looking for. Correspondence. A lot of correspondence taken from the archives mention his laugh.
His distinctive laugh.
Distinctive high-pitched laugh.
Interesting.
Here's the thing with if you watch Amadeus and you have not seen it, I'm sure you have a very stuffy, angry old white man in your head as Mozart. Not.
Oh no, he's a cut loose.
He was a punk rocker of his generation.
Yeah. Really cut. He should have won Best Actor if he didn't. F. Murray Abraham won Best Supporting Actor that year, but goddamn, Tom Hulce was on fire. He was great.
He was fantastic.
He's a young man, unchained.
Mm-hmm. It won, I believe, 8 Academy Awards.
Yeah, because Mozart was being portrayed as a sort of eccentric young genius, and Tom Hulce did a hell of a job.
And you know what? Tom Hulce did do a great job, but Salieri was equally as great. He was equally up to the test. F. Murray Abraham was fan-fucking-tastic. He plays evil so well, but he's like so conniving and... But you almost feel bad for him.
Yep. He's a tragic figure.
Very tragic.
He's a very tragic figure.
I think he might have been on your sympathetic villains.
Oh, if he wasn't, he fucking should have been. Yeah. He may have been.
And there's a scene at the end where Mozart's not doing too well and he's in bed and Salieri's there trying to get his work down on paper before he dies. And actually, Hulce was not instructed to by the director, Milos Forman, but Hulce came up with this idea on his own. He was actually skipping lines of dialogue, Brian, to purposely confuse F. Murray Abraham.
Really?
So like F. Murray Abraham was actually confused on set sitting next to him, like, but he just kept rolling with it. But he's like, I don't think that's what he's supposed to be saying right now, but he kept rolling with it. So it was very authentic.
Wow.
Like, this man is speaking gibberish.
Interesting. I didn't
good
know
shit.
That.
Amadeus. Check it out. 1984, Best Picture.
Number 5.
Best Picture winner.
Nominated for Best Picture.
Oh, it lost, but it's not good. Get
and
out.
5 other Oscars in 2010. I think... We all know the story of 127 hours before we all went to see it. We all know it was going to happen. We all were dreading it.
I thought we were doing good ones, though.
You don't think it's a good movie?
Yeah.
Oh. I love this movie. I mean, I don't know if I love it, but I really enjoyed it. It was a very good movie.
I thought he cheated.
How?
Because I thought that we were going to get a restricted narrative.
We kind of did.
I thought we were going to get a, what is that term that we coined? Limited storytelling?
Yeah.
I thought we were going to be stuck in that rock with him, and somehow he was
we
going
were,
to make
for
a
movie. The most part.
No,
like
there was
80% of the
tons
film.
Of like flashbacks and fantasies, and we're constantly. He was in a fucking kayak cruising through beautiful water for half the movie.
But you were okay with Fruitvale Station having flashbacks, but you called it taking place in one day.
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay.
Because I thought I'm like, how the hell is he going to make a movie interesting about a man stuck in a crevice?
Well, I think he did. I guess we have to agree to disagree. But Danny Boyle directed, James Franco starred.
Cheated.
Based on Aaron Ralston's book Between a Rock and a Hard Place, he called it. Or Aaron Ralston did, the guy who was based upon. Quote: so factually accurate is as close to a documentary as you can get and still be a drama.
What?
That's what he said.
He had like fantasies about having threesomes in a car, didn't he? Documentary. Yeah, there was threesomes in a car. Oh. Imagine now that this could be absurd what I'm saying, but imagine like All Is Lost. You know what you know about All Is Lost?
Sure.
The guy in a boat.
Sure.
Except half the movie is him thinking about his wife and children and the days of when he was back on
a
land.
A lot of flashbacks and stuff.
Imagine.
Yeah.
It's cheating.
Well, that's
at least he's on a, He's got a lot more to work with on a boat, and he can go up a mast and like deal with flooding. Sure. And you know, he's got a lot of work to do. Yeah. I guess it would just be a 90 minutes of a man hacking his own arm off, which I guess would be.
Right. But I think most people knew, or at least I certainly did, when this movie came out. I mean, Aaron Ralston was doing like publicity for this film, so he certainly knew, like, well, this guy's going to get out of there minus one arm, so I wonder how this is going to go.
I remember hearing the story when it happened.
Yeah, when it happened, of course.
Everyone was talking about it.
Back in 2000.
Swiss Army knife, right?
Yeah, it was. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, he dug it anyway.
Actually, I had the image in my head. It was much, much different. It was a boulder the size of him. Like, it was like a Indiana Jones boulder in my head when I first heard the story, and he was hacking away with a tiny little Swiss Army knife. But you know what? I think that there could have been like a maybe only a 60-minute story could have been, you know, squeezed out of there where it's just him in the crevasse.
Maybe. But it was a feature length, and what are you going to do? Right. Number five for me. 127 hours. Thank you for...
Mike Carano did a 127 seconds, I think it was, or minutes, and a rock falls on his penis. It's a pretty good little short that he shot all by himself.
Stupid.
Hey, it was pretty good. It was pretty funny. You can see his butt, too.
It does sound kind of funny.
You can see his butt. It does. Mike Carano's butt is featured in that video. 127 minutes? Seconds? I don't remember. He's on a bike.
Seconds would be funnier.
Here, pick one. Pick a card, any movie. Pick a movie.
Pick from the middle this
time.
There
you go. Much better. What do we got here, Bri? What do we got? What's the name of that movie?
That is Bonnie and Clyde.
Bonnie and Clyde. Oh, so good.
Just talked about this maybe 6 months ago.
Nope.
No?
Don't think it's ever made a list.
Was it Badlands?
Badlands gets talked about quite a bit. Similar, because you know what? It's a pair. Killing. Yeah.
Driving a
This
killing.
Is the true life account, Brian, of Clyde Barrow and Bonnie Parker. Rated M for mature.
That was back then, with the code.
I think it's still, for some kind of strange loophole, still the only movie that continues to be rated, officially rated M. One of the first movies, this is directed by Arthur Penn, one of the first movies, it was heavily, 1967, heavily influenced by the French New Wave. This is right before the golden cinema of American movies, where Coppola, where directors really took the reins. This is kind of the beginning. 1967 was kind of one of the... Might come up again later.
Oh.
67 might come up again later. But this is one of the first times also good and bad was kind of blurred. Like, you couldn't tell. Like, cops
anti-heroes.
Good. Anti-heroes were really brought
the flavor of the day.
To light. It was during a time where we were at war in Vietnam. It was the beginning of that, too, with protesters and a lot of very angry, disillusioned Americans. So the kids ended up fucking loving this movie. At first, the studio, I think there's a story, Mayer from MGM, Mayer, Golden Mayer. He
Metro actually, Golden Mayer.
Whatever the fuck's the white man with the jowls.
I'm sure he was.
Yeah. He stormed out. He went to the bathroom like 3 or 4 times during the movie. He's like, no one's going to watch this. Much the same as American Graffiti. Mm-hmm. Like, the old studio ads just did not understand. They released it as though it was a B-movie. Bonnie and Clyde was only like put in drive-ins and a few select theaters. But it gained popularity. And they re-released and re-rolled it out. And became a huge smashing success. In fact, Warren Beatty, that's kind of where he became Warren Beatty, was because they had such little faith in the picture. They gave
Faye Dunaway, too.
40% of the proceeds.
Really?
So he was producer in the sense that he got 40% return. And he became a monster.
He cashed in.
He became a monster. Let's see. Bonnie and Clyde. I got some interesting little factoids here, Brian, that I pulled about this here film.
Okay, let's hear it.
Cher auditioned.
Really?
And Sonny Bono found out about it later and went and screamed and yelled. Can you picture little Sonny Bono?
Jumping and like pounding.
Yelling
on his,
and screaming
on his knees.
At Warren Beatty saying, how could you let my wife audition for such a controversial role?
Wow.
Vote Bono. Because he became
the
mayor.
He's already planning on running for mayor?
Became the mayor.
Like in 20 years.
What about that controversial tree that came out of nowhere? How about that, Sonny? Tree's controversial.
A lot of controversy.
Anyways, can you imagine what kind of a world that was back then, like 1966, when he's finding out that Cher is auditioning for the part that Faye Dunaway ultimately got? Roger Ebert had only been a film critic for a short 6 months when this film came out, and he declared it the first masterpiece he ever got to see while on the job as a film critic. He loved it. Smart man.
Yeah, he was.
I can say that now that he's gone.
He was on point.
Now that he's gone, I can say that. Jean-Luc Godard. Famous French controversial filmmaker who's still credited with created the jump cut.
Okay,
he's avant-garde, and you know he did a bunch. Controversial in my mind in the sense that people love some of his shit that's unwatchable. But he invented the jump cut.
I had watched a lot of his stuff in film school, and it was tough.
Some of it's tough, but some of it's great too. You know, he was trying new things, and without him, movies don't look the way that they do today. He's still influencing things today. But it's a funny little aside. But he invented the jump cut, which we see so often now, where a character they don't move the camera. It's not a fluid cut. It's just like the character's in one side of the room, and then all of a sudden he's over at the window, right? I've talked about this on the show, but it's been a while. And the way that he invented that was that studio told him he had to cut his movie down, and in a passive-aggressive move, he just cut out a bunch of like random parts.
Yeah,
just random parts of his film just with scissors, pasting them back together, and the critics, which is another example of critics being critics,
were
like, he's a fucking genius! Loved it. And now it's been mimicked, and it's been done ever since. The original script Clyde was written as bisexual, but Arthur Penn refused to shoot that because it would have been he didn't want to make a movie about freaks, and you know, it was a different time, 1967. Sure. A guy who's having a love affair with not only Bonnie but also Shirley MacLaine at one point was going to be Bonnie. Because this is really interesting. Warren Beatty was
his sister.
Only the producer. He wasn't going to be starring in it.
Oh,
once he decided to play the role for obvious reasons, since Shirley MacLaine is the sister, she no longer was up for it. This is the debut of Gene Wilder. It's his debut performance.
Really?
And I don't know if that was mentioned. It may have been mentioned a few weeks ago when we did top five debuts. And what else? I got one last final thing here, I believe. One last final thing. What's the last final thing there? Oh, the scene at the end, the infamous cinematic shootout. Mm. That was it was supposed to be even more horrific than it actually was. It's pretty when you're looking at it.
Gruesome for the day.
Through 1967 eyes, yeah, it's pretty gruesome. I mean, there's parts of his skull flying off. If you actually watch it and detail it, they wanted to mimic the Zapruder film, which was big at the time. Obviously, JFK.
The Zapruder film.
Yeah, and they actually had fishing wire geared to a fake scalp that he was wearing that was supposed to be pulled. Right.
Wow.
Like his scalp was getting blown off, but the I guess. They only did it. Well, they only shot it once, and they had to get it. They had four cameras rolling, different speeds from different angles, obviously. And the makeup guy, who was supposed to pull a scalp and make it look like his scalp blew off, which would have been just horrific. He was so nervous he forgot to do it. Actually, I think he was holding a piece of fruit, or she was, and that was what was supposed to cue them to pull the fishing wire to make a scalp fly off. But 54 seconds is how long the scene takes. Mm. It's pretty long watching someone get shot, two people get shot for 54 minutes.
If you think about like the famous scene where Sonny Corleone gets gunned down, that's probably 12 15? Seconds.
Yeah. I was going to say 12. I wish I said 12 now.
That would be awesome. Crossover.
I was going to. But they actually had to tie her leg to the gear shift so that she wouldn't fall all the way out of the car. But it's a great infamous scene there at the end. If you haven't, I pretty much everyone's seen it if you like movies. And I found out in my research, Brian, this week, and damn am I mad. You ever heard of Prim, Nevada? Of course you have.
Yeah,
you're
Prim, out here, the city, Prim, Nevada.
It's a horrible little, I shouldn't say that.
It's on the way to Vegas.
It's a tiny little town where Art Bell used to live. Michael Jackson had a home out there.
Isn't Prim the first town where you can gamble in once you cross the border?
It's like right on the California border. Yeah. It's one of those border towns, and it's a little dicey. Anyways, they have, and I've been through there so many times. I like my dicey areas. They have the actual Bonnie and Clyde, the actual car, not from the movie, but from the actual
the robberies.
Couple. Wow. The shoot that got shot up on display in the Prim casino there, and I've probably passed that goddamn car numerous times. I'd love to see that thing. So, long story short, no show next week. I'll be in Prim.
Fair enough, Logan. You're in. Anderson and Prim. Hey, a question for you. Did you know the ending of this movie because it's an iconic ending?
I think because of the movie itself and by the time.
It is kind of everyone. I mean, Bonnie and Clyde are real people.
And everyone knows that Bonnie and Clyde got gunned down, I think.
I think so.
I think they knew. I think before the movie was made and there was so much folklore and those kinds of stories were so much bigger than life before movies. You know what I mean? I think it was kind of like one of those stories. That
yeah, like Dillinger or something. Everyone kind of knows, you know.
Speaking of Dillinger, actually, they took a lot of things that Dillinger did and other gangsters of the day, and they gave them to Bonnie and Clyde in this movie. They were a collection of many gangsters of the day.
Huh.
Many gangsters of the day. Yeah.
Amalgam.
Like Gene Hackman's character, he jumps up on the teller's desk, you know, like they do in robbery scenes all the time. And he actually got that from Dillinger, I think. I don't know. One of the gangsters got it from a movie before that, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so they're all imitating chicken each other. And the egg kind of thing.
Yeah.
Number four for me. A recent film. Just a few months old.
Oh, Christ.
But goddamn, Captain Phillips is quite a good movie. Do you not feel the same way?
Well, I got that syndrome with like August and Osage County. Like the equivalent of seeing the play version, I saw the Norwegian A Hijacking, which I found to be a lot more interesting. Very, very similar movies, but
but it wasn't about the same incident though.
It was it could have been. I mean, it wasn't. It was a separate pirating, but it was Somali pirates, and it was a boat that got captured in the same waters.
Okay,
you know?
Fair enough. I had not seen that film, so this is the first I'd seen of the. Of the hijacking. This is, of course, the hijacking of the Tom Hanks captained boat. He plays the captain in this. It is directed by Paul Greengrass, who is a...
Handholder.
Huh?
Hand-holding shooter.
He's a tremendous director of action. Bourne Supremacy, Bourne Ultimatum, United 93. Another film where you know the ending is very, very good.
If I was like his friend, I would buy him a tripod for Christmas.
Say, hey, Paul, you probably know what this is, but you're going to enjoy this.
You can try it out. Give it a shot.
Give it a roll in your next film.
No, it actually works on a boat. You don't want to be going up and down on a tripod if you're locked down on a boat. You know what I mean? You'd get sick sitting there in the audience watching.
Oh, yeah, because the background's constantly moving, but everything in front of you is staying the same.
In fact, Spielberg wanted to lock down his cameras on the boats in Jaws, and some big movie mogul knew enough to tell him, hey, hey, kid.
Big mistake.
You're going to be good, but don't do that because you're going to make everyone throw up in the audience. True story.
What was I going to say about Captain Phillips? I'm going to say something.
You're going to say something introspective. You're going to say, maybe in America.
Maybe in America.
Oh, there's so many bad lines in this movie, Brad.
So the thing I was going to say is that as soon as this incident happened, whatever it was, three years ago.
Look at me.
Yeah.
I am the captain now.
I am the captain now.
He was great, though.
He was great.
Skinny black guy Steve-O was awesome. He looks like Steve-O.
Come on.
He does.
Stop it.
He looks a little like Steve-O.
Is he bald?
When Steve-O was drugged up. He looks a little bit like drugged up Steve-O.
Yeah, a little bit.
You can see Steve-O in him a little bit, right? It's not just me.
You think he's ever snorted wasabi?
This guy?
Yeah.
No.
The actor?
No, not yet. I mean, he's just getting his taste now. He's up for an Academy Award. I mean, give him time.
That's a good point. He is up for Academy Award. I remember when the incident happened, whatever it was, 3 years ago or so. I don't remember when it was. But I remember thinking, wow, this is going to be either made into a great movie or a very interesting documentary.
Wait, you remember when this happened? Because this happens all the time.
No, I remember this one where they called in SEALs and they Yeah, everyone knows they shot the guys like through the boat, and like there was like night vision goggles, and there was a whole like, yeah, I remember this being like a very.
I think you're
big...
getting confused with Zero Dark 30.
Save.
I don't remember, Brian. I don't remember this being a big story, but I avoid the news like.
No,
the
I remember
plague.
It being a big. It was like an overnight thing, and like it almost happened not in real time, but it was like, oh, those guys that got, you know, taken hostage.
Another thing that I hold against this movie is, you know, they got Tom Hanks to play the captain, and apparently the real captain, real life captain, kind of a prick.
Yeah,
everyone hates
him. Wasn't a likable guy from a lot of accounts.
Didn't quite go down the way that they portrayed it as heroic in the movie, as you might the crew might have you believe, the actual crew.
What was the captain's name?
Phillips.
I can't find it.
I believe it was Phillips.
Oh, was that it?
I think it might be Phillips, kind of like the screwdriver.
Good call.
Sorry, I didn't realize you were making a funny there. I have a hard time figuring that out with you sometimes.
I don't appreciate that.
But that's another thing with the a hijacking, which I've talked about with you, is it's through the cooks, the ship's cooks. Mm. I'm saying cooks. It's one person.
The cook.
His
of
eyes.
The ship.
Yeah, the cook. The ship's cook. It's through his eyes. I mean, we're not. He's just a lowly cook who wants to get back to his family. He's not any kind of like heroic. Like, take me. Which, you know, do we always have to see like you know? The white guy being the hero, maybe in America. There's just a lot of cliches there.
Okay.
Didn't like
it. Number three for you.
Captain America.
Three. Hey,
Captain Phillips.
Look at me.
Yeah, you look at me and you pick a movie there, buddy.
Oh, right down the middle.
Oh, it's going to be a good one. I can feel it because you know why I picked it. Oh, look at that. Yes, Nazis Prison. Top five prison film, which we should maybe revisit.
Okay.
God damn, that was a good episode. And that was like 7 years ago. Not since Top 5 Prison Films, Brian, has Escape from Alcatraz come up on this old list here. Escape from Alcatraz. 1979, directed by Don Siegel.
No one knows how it ends.
Brian.
Sorry.
Brian, oh my God. It was like one of those moments at a party where somebody stops everyone like at the coffee table, like everyone's sitting around the coffee table.
Record scratch?
Yeah. Clunker, as my wife would call it.
Oh, come on.
Well, no one knows. Anyways, Don Siegel, one of five movies that he made with...
Clint.
With old Clint. This is Patrick McGoohan, Robert Bluesome, and Jack Tebow, Fred Ward. And it is a true life account of Frank Morris and Warden Doc, all not Doc, but the guys that escaped from Alcatraz.
So now, it was actually an escape from the unescapable prison.
Unescapable prison, and this actually led to the prison being shut down.
Do you know where this prison is?
This prison's in Frisco.
It's in San Fran.
Hella yeah.
It's in the city.
Hella yeah.
Hella.
It's
hella in the city.
Apparently, back in 2003, Mythbusters reenacted the entire thing. The television Mythbusters reenacted the entire escape, and they got away with it.
Yeah.
They got away with it, Bri-Bri.
My hunch is that they didn't get away
more
with
on
it.
That, more on that later.
Oh,
hold on.
Really? Okay.
So Clint Eastwood, Fred Ward, and Jack Tebow, especially Ward and Tebow, they were cast in the film partially just due to their athletic ability. Said I'm reading that directly.
Oh, really?
Director Don Siegel thought that he had lost his actors in the treacherous currents numerous times. Two or three times, he's like, oh, fuck. He thought that he actually lost them. But they did all their own stunts, and they were climbing over walls and jumping in water and all that.
Well, that's what I was going to say is I can't imagine guys in prison are that well-nourished. I can't imagine they're that healthy.
You know what you get in prison?
In order to make the swim from Alcatraz to the shore, you got to be in decent
shape. That's a good point, because the Mythbuster guys
are in decent shape.
And they probably trained for it a little bit.
That's what I'm saying. You don't take that on unless you can swim well.
Now, we're doing top five movies that are good, even despite the fact that you know the end. The movie's called Escape from Alcatraz. I think we have a pretty decent idea going
and
in.
I think it's a kind of a legend. At least it was where I grew up, a legendary thing about the guys who escaped from Alcatraz.
I watched this movie. It's one of those ones that I watched on the paid movie channel when I was a small child growing up over and over again. I remember I'd get panicked whenever I knew that the finger-cutting scene was coming up. There's a finger-cutting scene, which is just at the time, intense. As I was a child, it was hard to watch. Now I look at it, it's comical.
My parents made me watch this film when I was probably 12, 13.
Made you.
They were watching it and I was at home with them. And the only thing I remembered about the scene was about that movie was the finger cutting scene.
And I remember the very end of the credits, they show the actual masks that they made.
Yeah.
And that's horrifying.
With like paper mache
that's
or something.
Creepy,
or
creepy shit.
Made out of toilet paper or something? Or?
Yeah, they're made out of like cardboard, anything they get their hands on.
Paper mache.
But just it was like a still shot of that with the credits and like some creepy music. It was horrifying.
That's right.
But in the real life, 1962, escape attempt, a week after. A sea freighter going through San Francisco by Frisco. Brian, can you call it Cisco?
No, that's a rapper.
Really confusing. A comedian too, questionable.
Wait, is Cisco a rapper or is he like a singer?
There was a black rapper with blonde hair named Cisco.
Thong, 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 thong.
And his publicist told me I shouldn't say that.
Okay.
But yeah, he's not a fan of the ladies, which is fine. It's just he pretended to be.
He was misogynistic.
I don't like. If you're making an entire living by, you know, saying that you want to bang vagina, but in real life you're chugging.
Let me see that thong.
I don't know why you weren't Cisco.
What do you mean?
Another one of those clunkers.
I don't understand what that means.
Hey, you sing the song even better than him.
Oh,
I was being facetious,
okay.
Could
have been Cisco.
Anyways, a freighter going through Frisco, reported to have seen, which is weird, 1962. I feel like in 2014, you see a body floating with an Alcatraz uniform on.
Mention it.
You're going to call it into someone and have somebody fish that body out. But no, they just put it in the log. But 1962,
future generations.
It was logged that there was a body floating with which about a week after the escape, which is sad to think that they actually died. But in the 29 year period, Brian, there were 14 escape attempts at Alcatraz. And of the 39 men that were involved, 26 were captured, 7 were shot dead, and 3 drowned. And then there were 3 that were never heard from again. And that's what this movie, Escape from Alcatraz, is all about.
Wow.
I love this Escape from Alcatraz.
Yeah, I
love
this movie. I can see this again. It's been a while.
Yeah. Watch this. He hasn't seen it, but I'm going to assign. Logan, you need to watch this movie.
Yep. Just added it to my list.
Fantastic. Smart move. Plus, you know what? It's got Clint in it. And Clint is so hard not to enjoy in anything he's in.
It's true. This is one of 74?
No, Brian. We already talked about 1979. Good year for Pittsburgh. Pirates and the Steelers,
that's
Brian.
That's right. They're at the top of their game. Number 3 for me.
You can say it. We're all waiting with bated breath.
I'm tempted.
Oh, my God. Just do it. If it's going to be entertaining at all.
I'm tempted to throw in my... My controversial one.
Oh, speaking of controversial and your taste in movies, recently saw a trailer for the new Muppets.
Oh, how lovely. You were turned on.
Didn't look too bad.
Yeah, fun.
Think they might actually hit on something that I might like this time around. Yeah. Love that Tina Fey.
You know, I saw it and it didn't look good to me.
Oh, that makes perfect sense. That makes perfect sense. I think I might go see this.
Number three.
Mm-hmm.
Was going to be
mm-hmm.
a very worthy inclusion.
Oh, Christ.
The People versus Larry Flint.
But you're going to go controversial?
I'm gonna change it up.
Good.
Do something controversial.
Smart move.
I think everyone was prepared.
I'm cracking himself up.
I stand by this. I think everyone was prepared and knew what to expect from the end of Star Wars Episode III, Revenge of the Sith, from 2005. Written and directed by George Lucas.
We all knew
what to expect in this movie.
Is this where we get to see how Darth Vader became Darth
yes.
Vader?
Yes!
That was pretty sweet.
It was pretty sweet. Yeah, this is what I've been waiting for. Since Episode 1 was a piece of shit and Episode 2 was a piece of shit, but all we wanted to see was how Darth Vader became Darth Vader. We want to see him become the robot, half man. We want to see the fight with Obi-Wan Kenobi. We want to see it all. And we finally got it. And even though we knew it was coming, and I will say, Star Wars Episode 3 has gotten a bad rap because it's like a flower in a field of manure. Mm. Like, it's surrounded by shit with all the other prequels. It's not a bad movie. In fact, I'll go on record as saying this is actually a good movie.
It's like a mushroom.
I'll go for that.
One of the hallucinogenic mushrooms that are great. They grow out of cow pies.
Yes, and you get to see everything you've been wanting to see. This is like the world's... Is this the world's longest cinematic cock tease? Sorry to say that, Monk.
Yeah,
but to go on, like, you know, the whatever it was, 7.5 hours of prequel to get to this, to get to the sweet spot, to get to the candy center.
Ooh, Jar Jar.
That's what I'm talking about.
No, listen, you're absolutely right. We knew it was coming, and this is a glorious scene. I've only seen it once, and it's fantastic. It's absolutely amazing. I love seeing, because it's like a character, if you're our age or around our age, or if younger even, you've had Darth Vader in your life, your entire life, for most of your life, and to see how he got to be like that robotic poodle-faced man that you know so well,
yep,
is fantastic.
Yeah, and it lived up. It was everything that in as much as this can live up to our expectations, it delivered. It was exactly what I hoped it would be, and it was good.
This is an interesting little add on, Brian, is I was over at Panavision. You know, Panavision was
the camera
where all the cameras, pretty much for pretty much every movie you see that's shot out here,
it's
anyways,
true.
Comes from. And they
at least used to be.
Yeah. It still is. It's a hotbed. And okay. I was over there talking to some camera guys just recently. It's because it's close to where I live, and I have access, and I'm actually doing some stuff over there right now. And turns out that the new Star Wars, I might be on board.
Really?
It's being shot on film.
Wow.
It's one of the very few productions actually being shot on film. It's going the exact opposite of what old pinched with arrogance face Lucas. I saw my wife, we were watching that documentary.
The People vs. George Lucas?
No, that's fantastic. I love that movie. No, we were watching that. It's now streaming. It's at the top of many lists. I keep seeing it. It keeps getting shoved down my throat. All right, I watched it. Fuck flicks. I get it. Drew, the man behind the posters. Have you seen that
one? Oh, yeah.
Shoved in your face
yet? I have not seen it, but I'm very familiar.
It's decent. It's okay. But a lot of George Lucas in there. And the wife, I guess, not that familiar with his overall being. And she just looks at me and she goes, his face is just pinched with arrogance. Pinched with arrogance. And I get the sense that he's incredibly uncomfortable when he comes off.
Yeah.
You know who comes off as is really very likable is old Speely. Speely's so much fun, especially when compare and contrast him to the old to George Lucas. And Spielberg he's got a sense of humor.
He's a
laughing
person.
I get a lot of people angry that I hate Spielberg so much, and I hate any great film. Just same way that I hate the Coen brothers for making Llewyn Davis, which you were calling Llewellyn Davis, occurred to me the other day.
The first couple times, yeah, I figured it out.
These guys that can make essentially anything they want because they're so good. Spielberg included, but they make fucking War Horse. Yeah, I'm pissed. I get annoyed that you pander.
I got that.
You make shit.
That makes sense to me.
You should make great every time.
Yes, if you're capable.
Strive for Kubrick.
You're not living up to your expectations.
Right.
To your potential, I should say.
Yeah. And when Lucas is making movies for his children, do not waste time.
Save it. Make a home movie.
But yeah, somebody sent me an email the other day. Your hatred for Spielberg disturbs me.
Yeah, so Star Wars Episode 3 is my number 3. I stand by it. Good movie, and you know the ending, but you don't give a fuck.
What happens? I forget.
You have to see it. Coming up next,
lava involved.
Conclusion to the list. I've gotta be honest. I don't care if I'm on it. The train left yesterday and I'm still here. Anderson, I don't know if you noticed, we've gone on quite a streak of great listener art. We've had the American Hustle one, we had the After Earth one.
After Earth.
That's what it was called. We've had some really, really good ones, and I want to keep the streak going.
Oh, After Earth was the racist one.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that's what it was called. That's really inappropriate.
That's what they titled it.
Hey, you should see, I got a little sneak preview of some of the ones coming up, too, from a very, very talented. In fact, this is how much I love the listener art. This is not, we did not rehearse this or anything. Brian, what's my phone screen right now?
That's the American Hustle parody.
Yeah, it's good shit.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Shit. Send us your listener art. Logan, where do they send it?
To contacttfv@gmail.com.
Yeah, send us as a link or an attachment, and we'll put it up if it's any good, or even if it's not, we'll put it up. But send it to us. We love seeing the listener art. Yeah. Welcome back. Thanks again to Good Talk, Russ. They are our feature artist of the week, Tucson, Arizona's own Good Talk, Russ. Check them out. AndersonandBrian.com. Links to everything. Good Talk, Russ.
Yeah. Punk rock.
Punk rock, rock.
I like to think that Russ is the guy that wanted to put together the band. I'm like, yeah, Good Talk, Russ. And then they went and they made the band without Russ.
You realize that's a line from the movie, right?
What?
Good Talk, Russ.
Oh, is it from a movie?
Yeah.
Good for them. What is it?
Vacation. It's after...
oh, yeah, of course. He Chevy.
Catches him in the pool. He's like, blah, blah, blah. He's like, I think Mom will buy it.
It's all, on, it's Good all talk, uncomfortable.
Russ.
Yeah.
Good Talk, Russ.
That's good, Brian.
It's a good story, Dad. Thanks. Think Mom will buy it?
Good Talk, Russ.
Good Talk, Russ.
But speaking of Chevy Chase, yep. Community back.
Thank God.
Full effect. That episode last week with the you were right.
What
Logan.
Is this? What is this?
That episode last doing? Week of the death of Pyrrhus and what he bequeathed to the group. Holy shit!
Abed, you get sperm.
Fucking sitcom vault.
So fast paced, so well done. I could watch that thing two or three times and still pick up new shit.
Okay,
you're missing out, buddy.
I probably am missing out on this conversation. I'll tell you that much.
Also, sperm.
So much laughter.
Hey, if you're abroad, you're listening to this. This is a show you're gonna like. It's on Fuckflix. It's called Top of the Lake. 7 episodes. Jane Champion? Campion?
Champion.
Jane. Yeah.
I think it's Champion.
Oh, she did not earn that name. No, it's got some really goodness.
No. Jane runner-up.
takes place in New Zealand, and Elizabeth Moss won a Golden Globe for her performance in it. She's Peggy from Mad Men. A lot to be said. A lot of good stuff going on with that with that Top of the Lake. My mom absolutely loved it. If that tells you anything. The ending made me want to skin myself.
Well, don't do that.
Fucking little Asian chick hissing.
What's happening to you right now? Talking about TV series and
Netflix
series?
Sorry, there's some good TV out there, right?
You should do a spinoff show to this.
Called TV Vault?
I'll produce it.
It's been talked about. Right. You'll produce it.
I'll executive produce. I'll lend my name to it so you can get some exposure.
God, you're insulting.
Number 2 for you. I'm going to pick one. Am I picking one?
Oh, yeah. Pick.
One or two.
This one. You picked the wrong one, you dumb fuck.
Sorry, buddy.
I'm going with a little space movie. A little space movie called Apollo 13. Apollo 13.
That is my number 2 also.
Directed by Ron Howard. Hop on here with me, buddy.
My number two.
Not a whole lot of interesting factoids to come up with this one. It stars a number of people, including... Walt Disney himself, Tom Hanks, Bill Paxton, Kevin Bacon, Gary Sinise, they're all astronauts in this movie, and Ed Harris, who plays Houston.
Yes, he does.
With the problem. Based on the true story, the ill-fated 13th Apollo mission bound for the moon.
Yep. I remember, so my specific recollection of this, I was in high school probably at the time, definitely was, and saw in the theater, and it was as much of a white-knuckle ride as a true story can be. Excuse me, I burped. And at a certain point, I'm like watching this with kind of like sweaty palms towards the end. I'm like, okay, I'm thinking to myself, well, they have to make it back alive because I know the story of Apollo 13. It's sort of a semi-well-known story. And the fact that I had to consciously tell that to myself, really an impressive directing job making that movie that tense.
Yes.
Really well done.
I remember seeing it, you know, it was a number of years ago. It was almost 20 years ago now. 95. But I, at the time, thought it was the best directed movie I'd seen all year. I was seeing a ton of movies. Not as many as I see now, but I was seeing a lot. I thought I knew what I was talking about. And I remember being appalled that it was not up for best director.
Yeah, it was up for best picture, but not best director.
Best director. And it was the best directed movie I had seen that year. That I thought that I kind of understood what a directed movie was, and I lost all faith in my knowledge of films when it was not up for best. Ron Howard deserved to be up for best director.
I totally agree. That could be looked at as one of the biggest Oscar snubs, that a movie where you know the ending, that was so tense and so wall-to-wall exciting, it was not – that's the definition of directing. You can take something that everyone knows, like you take, you know, like a bowl of cereal and make it delicious. You take something, a bowl of Cheerios, and make it a great meal. Like you're taking something that everyone knows and making it great.
Yeah, you're putting your own vision on it. And,
yeah.
Perhaps it's because – you know, a lot of directing is problem-solving, and perhaps it's because the actual Jim Lovell –
Jim Lovell.
Who Tom Hanks plays, was left-handed. Tom Hanks refused to be left-handed. Easy, quick fix there, Ron Howard. You can use this next time if you have the same issue. You just inverse the film, so you can have him write something with his right hand, and then you can just reverse the film as long as there's no writing on it. On his problem solving. You know, there's always
there
ways around.
Patches on the wrong side. People like following.
Put him
closely.
On backwards. You can have costume come up with something. Mm-hmm. There's ways around. Okay. There's ways around. Oh, another snub, another Ron Howard snub, is I can't believe, as much as I did not like that movie Rush, the sound was fucking amazing, and it's not up for any awards. Should have been up for Best Sound Mix.
I could have sworn, Logan, nope. Look it up. I could have sworn Rush was up for a technical Oscar or two.
The cast and the crew, Brian, I don't know if you came across
this. I thought it was sound.
But they flew between 500 and 600, those parabolic arcs in the nozzles.
The Vomit Comet.
Yes, and it did 500 to 600. To get that zero gravity.
Sounds awful.
That's
I would like commitment. To experience zero gravity, actually.
One interesting casting, almost near miss, was Charlie Sheen almost played the part that Bill Paxton ultimately got.
That would have been something.
Yeah. That's it. That's all you got to say about 13, number two. A whole lot of boring facts that I learned also. One more thing.
9 Oscar nominations.
Roger Corman has a little cameo in there, which I don't think I ever realized. Mm.
He's, of course, another Clint Howard.
Part of a tour group.
Clint Howard.
Part of a tour. Did I say that Danny Glover was a film debut Alcatraz? Escape from Alcatraz?
Was it?
Yeah.
Who did he play?
He played a black prisoner.
What?
Yeah.
That's weird. All right, number one for you, buddy.
Is it not my number one? Oh, yeah.
One more time.
This is a good one. It's a little tough. It's a good one. Right. Also 1967.
Ooh.
Same as the other movie that I was talking about, Bonnie and Clyde. This one, In Cold Blood. All right, now, In Cold Blood, turns out some cold-blooded shit happens, bro.
Oh, the Truman Capote,
Yeah, Truman Capote. Now, nowadays, now it's not 1967, we've had a movie called Capote come out, where that's it's right. All about the making of his movie.
I never saw
writing,
Capote.
Writing of his book,
that?
I should say. Capote, I mean, the main thing about for me for Capote
Wait,
is
win,
that...
Sorry, didn't he win Best Actor?
I believe he did. It proves that Philip Seymour Hoffman is a great actor. I mean, that's kind of what Capote did. And it is not my favorite performance. I love Philip Seymour Hoffman a lot, and I didn't really like what he was doing, like a creepy character. Because Capote was a bit of a creepy character.
Philip Seymour Hoffman
story.
Is kind of a creepy character.
These two guys go to rob a family, and it turns out the family doesn't have a whole lot. They're like farmers, and there's not a whole lot in the house. So they end up killing all the family in cold blood, thus the name, to conceal their identities. And they end up getting convicted. And in true life, Truman Capote, a writer, was newly graduated, and he wanted a story, and he wanted to write about something. So he ended up going up to prison and hanging out with these two guys and becoming quite attached to Perry, who was played by Robert Blake, which also lends itself to the interesting part of this movie because he plays a cold-blooded in cold-blood murderer and since has been let go, but everyone pretty much thinks
he's been linked to a high-profile murder.
OJ'd his wife with a gun, right?
Yes, after eating at a restaurant.
Yes. Well, I forgot something, honey. It's my gun. I'll be right back. John Forsythe's also in this movie. Some very interesting facts about the making of the movie, Brian, which you're probably not familiar with. Richard Brooks wanted to keep the realism alive on his set. So to get the authenticity that he was looking for, he actually shot at the fucking house where the shootings and the deaths and the in cold blood murder of his family took place. And the actual family's pictures are the pictures that are on the wall.
That is cold blooded.
Creepy shit.
Yeah.
Also, used the family's horse in some of the scenes, and they used the actual courtroom. God, it's creepy.
Oh, no.
That's super, super creepy. The two pairs of eyes pictured on the, a lot of the movie posters that you see. The main movie poster that you see, like if you go to IMDb, is you're going to see Robert Blake's big dumb face there. But a lot of the movie posters, you can find it online. They're not the actor's eyes. They're the actual killer's eyes that they use. Creeps.
Jesus.
But ranked number 8 on American Film Institute's list of top 10 greatest films, the courtroom drama, which makes me feel like maybe this one should have been mentioned when we did top 5 courtroom dramas, even though you did Scenes a few weeks ago. The studio really wanted Paul Newman and Steve McQueen, which would have made it a completely different movie.
Sure.
But instead, thank God, because I don't think this movie would have been as good. It would have been a totally different movie. How do you hate those guys? Well, you weren't supposed to hate these guys. They were supposed to be somewhat sympathetic.
Right.
Because you're seeing them through Capote's eyes, too. Capote ended up – you still think – especially if you see Capote, that movie, he was probably in love with Perry, with one of the killers.
Interesting. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Couldn't even watch him be executed. And these two guys get executed, which everyone –
yes,
pretty much knows, right? Yeah. He had to leave the room when during the hanging. But Newman would have, I don't know.
Even when Paul Newman is a bad guy, he's still incredibly likable.
Right. And he would have been a little too likable. I don't know if I could buy him gunning down a family. I could easily buy Robert Blake gunning down a family even before he gunned down his own family. That's not funny. But instead, here what I was getting to is Newman instead, thank God, went and made Cool Hand Luke. Can you imagine if he took this role and they gave Cool Hand Luke to somebody else? Ugh.
Wow. And what a different course of history film would have taken.
A lesser degree, but important nonetheless, is Steve McQueen instead did Thomas Crown Affair, which I fucking love. It's a great movie. I really love Thomas Crown Affair.
The original.
Both of them are really good. I hate to admit, but I like the Pierce Brosnan one as well.
It's good.
And also Bullet, which I do not like. I do not like that Bullet, Sam I Am.
Okay.
I do not like it. What's
Bullet number hand. One for me?
The first mainstream American film to include the expletive bullshit, Brian.
Whoa.
In Cold Blood. Bullshit.
Things
which
were
is,
changing a lot in 67.
Reminds me, I want to do this top five firsts in Hollywood, Brian.
Top five Hollywood
firsts? Top five film firsts.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's an example. I'm not going to use it now because it's being exposed here, but I can say first time bullshit was ever used in a major motion picture, Brian.
Okay.
Mainstream, it was probably like in some kind of B movie somewhere, but
that would just take a whole lot of weird research. Like I don't have anything come to mind on that.
Just do a little research, learn some shit,
yeah,
and then we can like get a lot of listeners know some interesting shit.
Number one for me.
What's the problem with that?
Numero uno.
Yeah, what is it?
This is an emergency number one. This came to me 10 minutes before I left for work. The work being this show, I'll call it work. And it immediately rocketed number one. How could I not put a movie I loved? It may have been one of my favorite movies of that. It was one of my favorite movies of that year. Shit, I forgot to write down what year it was. But God damn it. Everyone knows what happens at the end of Zero Dark Thirty. I fucking love Zero Dark Thirty. Now, as I wrote down at the time, directed by Catherine Bigelow, The Hurt Locker, Jessica Chastain, Kyle Chandler, and Mark Strong. Nominated for 5 Oscars, including Best Picture.
It wasn't the Best Picture, though, because Argo is much better.
That's true. So as I wrote down at the time, and I remember from the time, the first two acts...
A far more important and better made film is Argo.
Far more well-crafted.
Argo is just a better film, I mean, really. You know, if like you saw them both at 7-Eleven, you'd expect Argo to be like $20 and Zero Dark Thirty should only be like $10.
No, I'd expect Argo to be sold out, like in a little space.
Like, yeah, they just don't have them.
Place, Argo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God, that Argo's so good.
That's not the case, though.
The end is so realistic and awesome, too.
Yeah.
Unlike Zero Dark Thirty. Zero Dark Thirty kind of, you know, falls apart. It's not very realistic at the
sure.
end.
Sure. The third act kind of spirals out of control.
They softened it, you know, to make it more palatable for the audience.
For a general mass appeal.
Oh, wait, no. They actually killed kids and stuff. Wait, they actually showed what happened.
Yeah, there's torture and there's, yeah.
Fucking Argo!
So Zero Dark Thirty, here's the thing. The first two acts are a good movie. Maybe even a very good movie.
Damn it!
The third act is some of the best filmmaking you will ever see, certainly on the action side, but is one of the best directed scenes, sequences,
Brian, do you
acts.
Realize two of your movies came out last year?
This came out like 2 years ago.
The year before last, which makes it 2 years. I'm really pissed and I can't even let you finish because what does this say right here? And I told myself numerous times, I thought of my hilarious joke earlier in the week. I wrote it on my phone. I realized you're going to forget your hilarious joke. So I wrote down and I put it right in front of me. So I've been staring at this the entire show. Prisoners.
What about it?
That was going to be my joke. That was going to be my number one.
Because I spoiled the
because
ending?
You told the ending, so now everyone knows the ending.
Spoiled
yeah,
the
you
ending?
Did. You told the ending. So that was going to be my number one movie that is still good, even though you know the ending. And that was going to be my big fucking joke. I forgot.
Anderson.
Damn it!
You can still make your joke. Make your joke.
Make a joke. That's a really old joke. All right. I feel like we're coming off the
rails here. Zero Dark Thirty. White knuckle ride, even though you know what's going to happen. Right. By the way, hardly any dialogue in that whole third act.
There's a lot of chopper.
A lot of boots on the ground, a lot of whispering, a lot of hand signals.
Let's hear the listener top five.
Let's hear the listener top five.
Number five, American Beauty. Starts out the movie with, in less than 1 year, or in the next year, I will die, or something. Yeah, you know, something along those lines.
That's an interesting approach to it. Where
not
you
know, the spirit of the list, but I guess that counts.
Number four, a recent movie, Lone Survivor.
What?
Surprisingly.
You know, I'm getting a lot of emails and people saying, you know what, you should really give the movie a chance, which I won't.
So, thanks anyway.
I'm nervous right now. Speaking of White Knuckle, I'm really concerned that a certain movie is going to come up on this list. And it's going to make me have to not want to
trust our listeners.
Yeah.
All right.
Number three, mm-hmm. Zero Dark Thirty.
All right.
Number two, mm-hmm. Apollo 13.
Okay.
And the number one movie where you already know the ending, as voted on by our listeners, is Titanic.
Okay. All right.
Whew. What were you afraid of?
I was afraid of End of the Wild.
Oh, no.
That would have been furious. Come on, guys. You're better than that.
Hey, what is, Logan, when you get on the Rotten Tomatoes there, let me know what Lone Survivors are getting. I feel it's getting about 70, 71?
Yeah, it was 71 last week.
31.
What?
No.
Lone Survivor.
Sorry, that was Lone Ranger. I don't know why it's at the top of the Rotten Tomatoes page.
Jesus.
Because I guessed 41 or something stupid like that. And
I had it on top rentals.
I was very let down by all the critics who fucked me and made me lose that week.
74%.
What? Oh, wow. It went up? Everyone settled down.
Anderson, also rants?
Mm-hmm.
You have some?
Oh, yeah, I do. Embarrassing, but not embarrassing. Aviator, five-star movie.
Yes, sure.
Know the ending if you know anything about Howard Hughes. Turns out, long fingernails, beard, pee, jars. Titanic. High five-starred that shit. Oh, there goes my street cred. But that movie, I'm sorry. I don't give a fuck about them so much, but oh, actually. You know,
no one ever looked at
that. I do. Plus, we had not seen CGI like that before. It was
Come back.
I cried. I don't care.
Come back.
Fucking bare my soul here. Zero Dark Thirty, which you mentioned. Social Network, 5 stars, Brian. Good call. 5 stars. Moneyball, 5 stars. And 8 Men Out, 5 stars. I almost brought 8 Men Out back into the mix because it's been so long, Brian.
I made you watch. I signed you a long time ago. Conspiracy, right? That Nazi movie where they're all sitting around the table and Kenneth Branagh. Did I ever sign you that? I think I did. I'll sign it to you again.
Yeah, you did.
Oh, that was on my list. 1993, of course. 300 was definitely one that almost made the list. Milk was almost a good choice. Terminator Salvation, and if you think about it, because, of course, Kyle Reese has to live. Kyle Reese has to live and come back and save the human race. Lincoln, JFK, the assassination of Jesse James, and I almost got Clever Anderson and put Memento. Yeah. The ending happens first.
I get it. Yeah, that's what the listeners did with the first one with American Beauty. Okay. Look at the bag; it's so beautiful, most beautiful thing in the world. I love American Beauty.
Some of our more clever listeners said Castaway because you see them together at the end or in the trailer. You see him back at home.
That's true.
Well, for those of them that did not, you know, that movie would have been better if it just ended with him on the island.
You think so?
I don't need to see him going and fucking take that package to the lady with the wings.
Yeah, if they were going to be ambiguous about something, they should have just done it about him getting off the island.
They actually had him standing on a crossroad.
But that part I didn't need.
He was standing at the crossroad.
But I kind of enjoyed the part where he went back to real life and saw his ex-wife and all that stuff because that's an interesting, what would you do in that situation? I don't know. Yeah. I'll talk about it. Logan, what are we gambling on? Let's do some gambling.
All right, well, let's settle last week's first. Last week, you guys gambled on Jack Ryan, Shadow Recruit. At the time, the Rotten Tomatoes score was 71%. Anderson bid 53%, and Brian 60%. Mm. Speaking of what?
Kenneth Branagh.
Oh, that's right. Directed Shadow Recruit.
Now, currently, the Wednesday after release, the Rotten Tomatoes score for Jack Ryan Shadow Recruit is 63%, making Brian the winner.
Wow, it was only off by 3 percentage points.
Thank you for doing the math. Every week you win. You realize you do that.
I have a dilemma.
I got a 97% on the test, Mom. That's only 3% away from 100.
No, it's much
only 3% away from getting a perfect score on the test, Mom.
It's much more than that. Boy, Part of me wants to make you watch Lone Survivor. 74%. A lot of people telling you have to see it.
P-Berg directed it, Brian. P-Berg. I know.
Peter Berg's directed some good films.
Listen to me. This little gambling segment should be, I think, eradicated. It should be retired.
Why?
This is stupid.
People love it.
No one learns anything. Every week, I got to watch shit.
You're pouting. You're pouting.
Got a lot to do, Brad. I don't have time for this Lone Survivor,
all right.
Which I called Soul Survivor for weeks.
I'm holding on to Lone Survivor. Logan, what was the
point? No, you can assign.
No, I don't care that much.
You know what's kind of funny, though, is like I see these movies, and the wife just does not believe that I'm losing and that I'm being assigned. She's like, secretly, you want to see them. I'm like, I did not want to see. I just won 20 bucks.
20 bucks. Speaking of which, secretly wanting to see, what was the one that you said I said was streaming now on Netflix, The Square?
Yeah.
See The Square.
Oh, that's too easy, but okay. Great.
We're going to talk about it next week. We can both talk about it next
week. There we go. We'll all watch The Square and talk about how we can't believe it's up for Best Documentary
Square.
Next week. I have a feeling I'm going to be severely disappointed. I don't know why.
What to gamble on this week, Logan?
This week, you're going to be gambling on I, Frankenstein.
Oh, fuck me.
Hey, Bri-Bri.
Hey.
Are you afraid of some of the bullets that I have aimed at your head?
What are you talking about?
Because I mean, you're being very nice. Giving me The Square is a very nice thing to do.
Well, Lone Survivor is a good movie, too, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
Brian doesn't want to have to watch the comedy. Just be nice to Anderson.
Wait until Leviathan comes up.
I see no point in making you watch bad movies.
Just Friends.
Speaking of which.
Just Friends.
Speaking of which.
Brian, babies.
Speaking of which. Great movie.
Okay, let's go.
Top 5 movies where I already knew the ending. I knew it was going to be delighted.
Mm-hmm. All right,
I
got mine.
Fall in
I
love
mine.
With those babies. That's how it ended. I, Frankenstein. Fuck. A duck. Okay. What do you have?
37.
33.
Ooh. Ooh. But I, Frankenstein.
Okay, so if it's under 35.
But I, Frankenstein. Hercules is like, what, 4% or something last I saw? Hercules!
Well, currently the Wednesday before release, Hercules. I, Frankenstein has 0 reviews.
Oh, no.
With no Rotten Tomato score.
I'll take that as a win.
Anticipation. All right, let's move on.
33.
Let's move on. Next week, what are we doing?
What are you doing?
Is it time to start talking Oscars and shit? I feel like we got to put this last year to bed. Soon.
Yeah. When are the Oscars, by the
March
way?
March 2nd.
What?
Oh, shit.
They pushed them? Usually they're in February.
They're usually the end of February, but yeah. Oh, maybe that's... No, I think March 2nd might be the Friday that I scheduled the Vaulties for.
I'm going to change his name to Logan Erroneous. Yeah. Or Erroneous Logan, I guess, would make more sense. All right, yeah. It's got to be February or something. Probably February.
Logan, look it up.
I can't even watch him this year because that fake dancer is doing it.
Fake dancer?
Yeah, Ellen.
Oh, Ellen. Yeah,
she's not a dancer.
No, she's not, but she loves to dance.
Well, I guess she is a dancer because she dances, but apparently she doesn't like to dance.
Yeah, that's a funny part. She doesn't even like to dance.
That's
like,
the creepy part.
Like, you know,
yeah, it is March 2nd.
Back yourself.
Oh! Well, we'll take Erroneous right out of that name.
Wow. Correct.
I will be there correct on the red carpet.
Accurate, Logan. Wow. You're going to be there?
I will be there.
What are you doing then?
Working.
Yeah, interviewing people with Film Ball.
How so? How you
I work for a news station.
Uh-huh.
It's news.
You have to wear a tux? You got to wear a tux?
I do.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Hey, so if I watch the red carpet
this year so far,
might I see you in the background?
Possibly. Apparently, I was spotted on Eve during the Emmys.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah.
You know what you should do is wear a Film Ball shirt. Yeah, you got a Film Ball shirt?
Under my tuxedo?
Yeah, and every now and again get in front of a camera and just like Superman it. You know what I mean?
I'll just tape it to the back of my tuxedo Superman jacket.
Thank you very much to Good Talk, Russ. Feature artist this week, Tucson, Arizona. Check him out now, AndersonandBrian.com. And that is where you go to click through on the Amazon banner. Thank you guys for clicking through and buying all the stuff you buy. We appreciate it. Doing your normal shopping. We appreciate the clicks. It helps us out tremendously. It's also where you go to comment on the episodes if you want to speculate on whether or not Anderson and I even like each other.
Fuck
check
you.
Out I agree. Check out a list of our films discussed. Check out more feature artist information. Send us your listener art. Hey, thanks, by the way, to Mike Cole for providing the great photo of a birthday cake. Happy birthday, buddy. And thanks for making Film Vault part of your birthday celebration. Facebook.com/TheFilmVault. Twitter @TheFilmVault. And what else?
We've gone for Bango!